Good evening and welcome to the May 28th budget study session. I'd like to call our study session to order. And if Mr. Standish would call roll.
Mayor Winfield?
Here.
Vice Mayor Barrett?
Here.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy?
Here.
Councilmember Nicholson? Councilmember Pena?
Here.
Councilmember Rodman?
Here.
Councilmember Solomon?
Here.
Thank you, Mr. Standish. I'd like to thank everyone for taking time to join us this evening for our second budget study session. This meeting is taking place online to comply with the ongoing social distancing requirements and ensure the community's ability to participate. This was underscored by Governor Ducey's press conference earlier today, where he declared that we remain in phase one, which limits the numbers of individuals that can be grouped together at 10 or less. So the mechanics of tonight's meeting are going to be different, which we're becoming accustomed to in these past several weeks, and then our regular in-person meetings. In order to participate, one must be logged into Zoom directly by computer or telephone. For those who are unfamiliar with Zoom software, I'd like to provide a quick overview on how to participate. And my apologies in advance to those that have heard this. This may not seem like a quick overview, but everyone's microphone, except for the individual that has the floor, will be muted throughout the meeting to ensure a smooth and efficient meeting as possible. Only select staff can turn on your microphone at the appropriate time if you'd like to ask a question or provide comments. I'll do my best to let everyone know when it's appropriate to raise your hand for a particular agenda item. If you wish to address the council on the budget, please raise your hand only when I announce it's appropriate to do so. There's two ways to do this. For those participating on any platform other than by phone, find and select the participants icon. This will open a dialog box that lists all participants in the meeting. Scroll down until you find your name and select your name. Once your name is selected, a second box will pop up where you have the option to raise your hand. For those participating by phone, press *9 to raise your hand. Please wait to raise your hand until the appropriate agenda item has been announced and after I announce the opportunity to do so. Our aim this evening is to proceed in a timely and efficient manner. Once your hand is raised, staff will be alerted to your request to speak. This applies to the audience, staff, and members of the town council. So please raise your hand if you have a question or comment after I announce the appropriate time to do so. So generally, after a presentation, the council will have the opportunity to ask questions, make comments. When that's completed, I'll open it up briefly to public comment. So at the appropriate time, I'll call on those with their hands raised to provide questions, comments. I'll then announce your name and staff will unmute your access. This is in reference to the public, so you can speak. Please make sure you're not also muted on your personal device. As with all town council meetings, please clearly state your name and whether or not you are an Oro Valley resident. Also, speakers are limited to no more than 3 minutes. A timer will be used as with in-person meetings, and we ask that you please respect the 3-minute time limit. Mr. Standish, if you would read the first item of our budget session.
Presentation and discussion of the fiscal year 2020-21 town manager's recommended budget and preliminary 5-year financial forecast.
Thank you. So similar to last evening, the departments will give their presentation. Following their presentation, council will have an opportunity, if they so choose, to ask questions, make comments. We'll then go to the next item. And let me just, as a reminder of our budget schedule, so we had our first budget study session last night. This is our second. June 2nd, the Budget and Finance Commission will be focused on the budget. June 10th, we have a study session scheduled. June 17th, we'll adopt a tentative budget. July 1st, we have a town council meeting and a tentative study session, if needed, penciled in for July 1st. July 15th will be our final budget adoption. To begin this evening, Ms. Jacobs will speak to us. So, Ms. Jacobs.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. I did want to follow up from a question that was asked yesterday, and I've had an opportunity to get more information. As you know, the governor did announce distribution of CARES Act funds to local governments late yesterday afternoon. The town of Oro Valley is slated to receive $5.3 million in CARES Act funding for expenses that are eligible under the CARES Act, specifically targeted to local law enforcement. There are a lot of details associated with how we can use it, the manner in which we can use it, without violating the CARES Act. And so what I wanted to do is alert the council that I'll be getting the team together. This is also something that's clearly being discussed with colleagues across the entire state. And we will come back to you with at least a preliminary plan or recommendation at your June 10th study session. So I did want you to know it. I can tell you, and I think that everyone would agree, that it is absolutely good news for our budget. And it really does help with taking some of that angst away in terms of, even if it can only be applied to the police department or those expenses. And so, but what we want to do is, again, make sure that we're going to follow all the rules and have some options for the town council to consider for the future, and also the manner in which we're going to account for it in next fiscal year's budget. So we'll be back to you on the 10th. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And our team is ready and prepared, and I know that we're here. Everyone is online again for whatever questions you may have at the end, even if there were some from yesterday. But thank you for the opportunity this evening.
Thank you, Ms. Jacobs. That's wonderful news, and we look forward to hearing more on June 10th. So thank you. I will begin this evening with J.J. Johnston. Will present the Community and Economic Development Department budget. So, Mr. Johnston.
Thank you, Mayor Winfield, and good evening, council members and colleagues and attendees. On behalf of the 27 colleagues in Community and Economic Development as your team, it's a great pleasure to give you this overview of the work we're doing in the community. In the next six slides, I'll touch on some of our major accomplishments and essential functions that we are engaged in. Also touch on some major goals that we have in the next fiscal year, particularly those goals that relate to your budget. So with that, let me ask for the next slide, please. So by way of perspective, it was exactly 2 years ago to this date, May 28th, 2018, that town manager Mary Jacobs appointed me to serve as your director of the CED. And so many things have changed during the last 2 years. But for some perspective, the last 2 months have brought some very significant changes to the way we're all doing business. And that'll give me some talking points about some of the major accomplishments, because they were actually realized as part of our continuity of operations plan during the last 2 months. So it was literally 10 days ago, the town issued a news release detailing our new policy of all digital, no paper policy. We are in full, full compliance with our electronic submittal process already across all community and economic development functions. They include planning, permitting, inspections and so on. Today, virtually all of our permits and our inspection cards are issued digitally, and approved plans are emailed and issued in PDF format. The construction community that we work very actively with, our residents who used to have to come down to town hall and submit their plans, no longer have to leave their home. They could do it all electronically. And I want to give a specific shout out to Byer Vella, and David Laws, and Chuck King on our staff for pushing this forward and making it a reality. That is one major accomplishment we did not even anticipate this time last year. In the process, we've also processed almost 2,000 building permits, 115 related applications, several neighborhood meetings, electronic ones, more than 28,000 building inspections. In other words, the CED team members handle a lot of transactions. By comparison, on the slide, you see the circle wheels. That was from last year, how we were processing a lot of the public meetings and neighborhood meetings just in person. So the development and implementation of zoning and building code amendments, we're all doing this by Zoom, having neighborhood meetings, hearing applicants, having additional public outreach before they go to Planning and Zoning Commission and also Town Council. Just an outstanding use of new technology that the continuity of operation plans just basically thrust upon us. And I've been amazed on how our communications team has produced videos, reached out in social media, updated daily on our website about our COVID outreach plans, and also how our planning staff have become master level Zoom meeting experts and engaged neighborhood meetings. It's been remarkable to see the hundreds of people that didn't have to leave their home to come and hear about a project. So that is a very major accomplishment for the community. Additionally, about 2 months ago, we started very diligently personally contacting town staff, more than 650 businesses. This has been led by Margie Ombudsman, Margie Adler, who is serving as our Ombudsman and working directly with Amanda Jacobs and many town department employees to personally contact businesses to just see how they're doing, what information they need, services, creating updated contacts, delivering services. And now we have a contact database that we share with the Oro Valley Chamber. So that's part of the COOP planning, to be able to response to the business community and offer them immediate assistance. Of course, we are, thanks to your adoption of the Comprehensive Economic Development Strategic Plan a few months ago, we are implementing that pretty aggressively now and also modifying it, as you can imagine. Next slide, please. So the community and economic development team provides multiple essential functions for the town. Some of them are listed here. We actually work with every department in the town of Oro Valley and external partners to get projects done. Our town is number one job is to help implement the Your Voice, Our Future general plan. I believe our planning team presented a report to you a few months ago that we have already begun implementation of over 160 of those items that the voters wanted us to get right on, and we're in the third or fourth year of that. We enable new construction. Actually, we enable it, review it, and also monitor how all construction, horizontal or vertical, is doing in the community. We also insist on best building practices and making sure that public health and safety is maintained in the process. Also, in our three main departments, planning and permitting and building inspection, a couple of years ago, Mary Jacobs, town manager, brought forth together economic development into the fold so we can move faster and more collaboratively. So now we're able to meet directly with business owners and expedite projects quicker. Why is this essential? Because if we are successful as a town staff and a leadership team, we will help bring new projects in that will help expand the tax base, help increase the amount of disposable income our residents have to spend, and generate new wealth across the community and new financial resources for the town of Warrior Valley. To use a pandemic speak, with all of the pandemics that are around us and will be coming, a strong economic development program helps inoculate any community against a new downturn, whether it be a pandemic or some type of a recession. So I think the CED team and other town departments are very, very focused on economic recovery right now and community recovery as well. Next slide, please. Some of the major accomplishments is they align to the council strategic leadership plan, always about attracting and growing the local economy. And in July, I believe we're coming back to council with a couple of additional reviews of our commercial code amendments and our expansion of the employment zone and other things to put more available commercial property into the portfolio. Expansion of commercial centers, just to reimagining the Oral Valley Marketplace. Just earlier today, we received a formal submission from Town West Realty and their partners. So it will be game on for the CED team and all of the other departments to move through the proposals that Town West and the team have for that very incredibly valuable piece of property. I would just add on that we are required by code and by your policy direction to ensure quality development. So we are updating some code updates to ensure that we stay current with that. Just like 2 years ago, we started looking at the 2018 building codes and implemented that last year. And as I mentioned earlier, we're identifying a lot of internal efficiency opportunities. Town Manager Jacobs has put into her budget a line item for new permitting and building inspection software, which will obviously help us become much more efficient. So next slide, please. Just a moment. So activating the new permitting software is certainly a key goal of our department. It will reduce our cycle time. It will eliminate redundancy of staff work and help us become a much more efficient team, and also will help us replace a very inefficient system that frequently is down. Planning, we have so many things, planning things underway, the final draft presentations to you following the zoning code updates, particularly commercial and economic development expansion zone updates would be coming to you in July. We're also working on odor abatement codes, regulation for noise, and specific land use proposals. And of course, the timely completion of two general plan amendments that have already been initiated by video and Zoom meetings. And of course, the Oral Valley Marketplace. I think our economic development strategy is already being updated and revisited on many different fronts because of the new normal. I'm just delighted to report that we have checked in with all of the current commercial projects underway. None of them are stopping their projects. Some are delaying it a year, some are downsizing it, but every one of the commercial projects that we're working on is moving forward at some ability. That would be the Oral Valley Marketplace, two Oracle plays, two big projects with Roche Tissue Diagnostics, the Central Utility Plant, the Forum Building. Of course, the University of Arizona has two big ones with the Veterinarian College and the U of A Center of Innovation at Oral Valley. A Mohs Surgeon Advent Dermatology is coming in. We have several senior housing projects coming in. Splendido is expanding. You know, last year we collected almost $2 million in plan review and permit fees, which represented about $156 million in private construction. We certainly want to keep that going. And a key goal is to close what we have in the pipeline and add to that pipeline And I would also add on the single family residential side, the building permits are remaining pretty strong right now, even during this pandemic time. Marriage, for example, just issued 32 new permits just a couple of weeks ago. They have 150 on the waiting list, and they should be able to close about 50 sales here in the next few months. 13 more single family permits have been applied for. And if you've read the trend report that I offered to you 3 weeks ago, we're right on the money for that. And the article that was published in Forbes magazine very recently saying Tucson is projected to be the top community in the country to recover from the housing slump bodes very well for us. Next slide, please. So on the budget summary, operation and maintenance and expenditures, you can see that like all departments, we took a very hard look at where we were spending, where they were not must-haves, but like-to-haves, and we did some significant cuts. We cut about half of it across the board, administration, permitting and planning and inspection. You see where the cuts have been made, and there's a lot of detail. Our budget comparison overall, and I forgot to add this slide in, our overall expenditures are going to be down considerably from what was approved last year. And I would like to add that our staff has also come in over 8% under budget of what was approved. So I want to just thank the management team, Byron, David, and Chuck, and also Rachel and Margie for helping with this budget and helping with these cuts. May I have the next slide, please? So I just want to say in summary that we do provide multiple essential functions in the community. I won't belabor those anymore, except to just tell you that we have a lot of great projects underway. I didn't even name all of them. About 36 are listed in your budget report. We are here to serve the community of Oral Valley. The last 2 months have been difficult for all of us in the town who serve you. And I would like to just add, we know we have a tremendous amount of work ahead of us. The team members that I work with regularly are working very hard, coming in early, remoting in, doing evening meetings. We know that businesses are closing and people have lost their jobs, and families, many families, even in Oro Valley, are being financially devastated. We certainly deeply care about each person who lives here and wants to work here. And we're also concerned about the consumer confidence worldwide as this pandemic continues to change. I could just tell you, as a survivor of a hurricane and other economic setbacks in communities I served, I know that we can come back from this stronger and more efficient and more determined as we move past economic recovery back into economic expansion. I just want to say, before I take any questions, thanks to everyone who is shopping at home. That is absolutely critical. We continue to do that, support the home team. All of you who are working to stock shelves in grocery stores to protect public health, on the front line, the police officers, the public works officials that you heard from last night, everybody who is working to make our community better and recover faster, we greatly appreciate what you do. And meanwhile, back to the budget point, I would just say, like everybody else, we will do more with less. That's the new reality that we live in, and it's reflective of everybody we serve doing more with less. Thank you again, Mayor Winfield, Council, and colleagues for your leadership. It is a definite honor to serve you and the community of Oro Valley. That concludes my presentation, and I welcome any questions you may have. Thank you.
Sorry, I was had muted myself. So, Council, if you have questions, I see Councilmember Pena. I'll call on you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Johnson, I just have two. I just have one question, and this is related to page 61. And there are the line items of administration, permitting, planning, et cetera. The two items that stick out most to me, where there's a difference from the current budget year to this proposed budget. So administration goes from 96 to 29 and economic development goes to from 104 to 20. So can you just briefly explain how the big difference in administration, what you were able to do?
JJ, you'll need to unmute yourself. It looks like you're unmuted, but we can't hear you. Not.
I think we need the IT team.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Pena, I believe Jay is having technical difficulties on his side. There's not much we could do.
Well, JJ, maybe what we'll do is go to the next presenter, and maybe the technical difficulties on your end can get resolved, and then we'll come back to you for questions.
That would be
all right, so we'll go to Ms. Diaz-Trahan, our Parks and Recreation Director, for her presentation.
Probably sound like crap. My mic was in my lap.
No, you were fine.
Hey. Check your mic's live.
Oh, yeah. I saw that. Thank you.
Ms. Diaz-Trahan.
I can see myself. And I can hear myself. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor, Council, for allowing me to be your Parks and Recreation Director and to present the budget this evening. Before I dive in, I do want to talk about a misstep on my part. We have a fantastic project coming up, and we'll talk about that in the CIP. But specifically, what I'm talking about is the garage project at Steam Pump Ranch. It's over $500,000 project lump sum to do a restoration of a historically significant building at Steam Pump Ranch, which is exciting in and of itself. However, I failed to have a conversation with representatives from the Oro Valley Historical Society, specifically Roxy Johnson, who is their president, and our former mayor, Paul Loomis. We had been working with them on the development of a plan with the objective of the Historical Society moving into the garage. And over the course of time in thinking this through, my team and I, you know, and just looking at the popularity of that, recognize that opening up the property 6 days a week instead of one day a week, having park and recreation staff presence, being able to program the space, develop what's happening at the ranch. In my excitement for that, I failed to notify our partners. And so with that, I sincerely apologize. And I'm ready to move on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey.
We admire you, Christy, and we appreciate you so much as our parks director. And you are a courageous individual. Thank you.
Okay, so now I have to regroup to get to back to my more exciting self. So Parks and Recreation, first of all, for no one that maybe isn't aware, tonight at 8:30, we are going to be doing a test launch for fireworks on fairway number one of the Conquistador course. And so if people want to just turn up the volume so they can still hear presentations, but peek out their window to see if they can see it from their backyard or from their front yard or whatnot, that's really kind of the intent of this test launch, because we really want people to have a wonderful 4th of July celebration that's being presented by the town of Oro Valley. But we want them to do it in a safe manner in their backyard or with close friends or family. And we've also reached out to Dave Perry at the Chamber of Commerce, so that way his businesses are aware of this, with the possibility of maybe some restaurants and whatnot being able to extend their patio, and then they can have a celebration at their space and still be able to watch some great fireworks. So 8:30, Mayor, just keep an eye out on that if we want to have like a 3-minute pause.
Oh, we may even be done by then.
Oh yeah, even better. Okay, so I think I'm ready. Next slide, please. Okay, thank you. So we have for this past year some significant accomplishments. We secured a grant for an adaptive reuse study at Steam Pump Ranch, and it's really intended to show what the best economic long-term partnership opportunities would be at the ranch. This was secured from SHPO, the State Historic Preservation Office, and we anticipate getting that report at the end of this fiscal year. And that will also be, that information will roll into our Park and Recreation Master Plan. We successfully implemented a new recreation software, which has been quite a bit of a time saver, which has been great because we've been able to reallocate workflow to better deploy some programming. So that was a really great opportunity for us this past year. As we talked about, I think it was last week, the first phase of the master plan project was presented, and so we intend to complete that this next fiscal year. The Naranja Park Playground project is well underway. The all the play equipment has been ordered. We expect to have that here this month. And there's a little bit of rollover funds to complete that project. So we expect that to be completed in late summer. And our October events at Steam Pump Ranch were just incredibly popular. We had over 10,000 participants in 1 month, and that was only on a Friday night and a Saturday. And so that shows again the popularity of that property specifically to programming. And so we're excited to have be able to have an opportunity to have additional staff on site. And then of course another super exciting project was the installation of two new pickleball courts at the community center, and those were post-tension slab concrete courts, and so with that we also have started a pickleball league, so we are in the pickleball business. Next slide, please. Big picture, so committed to the general plan in terms of high quality parks, recreation, open space, and programming, and in terms of ensuring accessibility, providing diversity in our park system, in our programming, in our events, and also promoting Oro Valley as a destination in relation to economic activity. And so we work closely with JJ and his team on recruitment and retention of not only events, but also as businesses come in, as conventions come in, we work closely and partner with those groups. And then with regard to environmental, the protection and preservation of historically significant sites, the cultural sites, et cetera. Next slide, please. So strategic plan, I'll just briefly touch on this. This is your 2-year strategic plan. And all of the items that you'll see later in this slide are going to be related to one of these four. So either economic vitality, culture and recreation, or effective and efficient government, in two different categories within there. And those will be identified within each slide. So next slide, please. So the divisions within the park and recreation system are administration, aquatics, the community center, and the community center and golf is its own fund, but I'm identifying them separately within here because, as you know, the community center is managed and run by parks and recreation personnel, and golf is with a third party contractor, park management, and then recreation and culture. And by the way, that picture, that fireworks picture, was taken last year at JDK Park. Next slide, please. Administration. So some of the key pieces within our budget this year are the completion of the needs assessment and master plan. A significant reduction in our division was related to the travel and training. And one of our internal goals has been to develop a standalone park and recreation volunteer program. And so during our shutdown with regard to COVID, Lynn-Ann Dellerman specifically on our team and a handful of others have been working closely on developing this volunteer program. So it is very robust and to include position descriptions for an individual to volunteer, say on a regular basis, all the way up to large groups, Eagle Scout projects, et cetera. Related to the needs assessment, so there was a slight reduction in there for some cost savings. And we touched a little bit about on this last week when Mike Spetz was here doing the program or doing his presentation. And one of the key things that we will be doing internally in working with PROS, so they're going to provide us with a toolkit and a workshop so that way we can go out and do the work. So the work related to programming, assessment and assignment, resource funding analysis, partnership opportunities, as well as we will also be doing all of the HOA park and amenity inventory and mapping. So those, that large chunk of work is really what has helped us to be able to make some reductions. The beauty of this workshop, though, as it relates to the assessments and the resource funding analysis, is that those same tools can be replicated annually, so we can internally go back and revisit it and stay on top of it annually and make any slight adjustments as needed. Next slide, please. The Aquatics Division continuing to focus on lifeguard training and retention. And I highlight training in here specifically as it relates to how we're training our lifeguards related to COVID. If there is an incident on deck, wearing PPEs, et cetera, is pretty seamless. But where the challenge comes is when you have to make an in-water rescue. And so we work closely with CDC and with the American Red Cross on best practices. And so that's just a continued training component that we're gonna have to do as well as, you know, retaining our high quality guards. And that it falls again with the improved safety of the facility to ensure all of our participants are there safe and both in the water and out of the water. And then as start to, again, I don't want to say normalize because I don't know that we're ever going back to our past normal, but whatever our future normal looks like related to events, we'll continue to work on swim meets, synchro meets, and triathlons. Next slide, please. The community center, I just wanted to briefly highlight this. We will be revisiting this when we talk about the community center fund and golf. I believe that's next week. But a couple things that we're continuing to focus on is membership retention and recruitment. Staff training, again, very similar for with our lifeguards, with our facility attendants, with our fitness instructors. In our budget, we do have lighting for those pickleball courts that we installed. And then we have treadmills, and they're leased. And so the treadmills we have right now, we're just going in a month to month, and our intent is to get new treadmills, and those will have their own screens so that you can watch your own TV show rather than having just three monitors and you kind of have to watch what your neighbor watched because they got there first. So I can go a little bit more into that when we come back in June. Next slide, please. So culture and recreation, there is a reduction in the special event funds. So for example, the big picture there on the left, that was at 4th of July, I believe 2 years ago. And that's not gonna happen this year. And so that's part of those reductions. We also made some slight reductions related to the events that we'll have this fall. There's a lot of surveys and statistics that have been done by professionals that are asking the question, when things are open and people and you can go to an event, are you going to? And not everyone is going on, you know, the first 30 days. Then a few more will come in 60 days later. So our thought is that we're going to have fewer people attending our events, specifically in the fall. So we've just scaled back the intensity of those events. As I mentioned, continue to do all of the programming that we have at Steam Pump Ranch. Those are very popular in nature. And with regard to historic preservation, as I mentioned earlier, that's related to the CIP project that we'll talk a little bit about later as we get into CIP related to the garage. Next slide, please. Park management. So when the COVID hit and things were shut down, there were key pieces that were identified as essential services. Parks, open space, and trails were identified as an essential service. And as more and more people have to stay in place and, you know, almost socially isolate themselves, the respite has been going into our parks. And I can tell you, I've seen more people in our parks midday over the last 3 months than I have over the last 6 years. And it's been incredible to see so many people go out there and discover what's in their backyard or rediscover it because they're using our park system in a different manner. And so with that, we're going to continue to focus on just the overall improvements of our park system, replacing some site amenities. We have a booster pump at Riverfront Park, for example. It's a two-phase project. We started it this year, and we will continue that next year. And so that will improve the amount of time that we have to irrigate out there just because it's, you know, it's an 18-year-old park. And then also we're going to install an ADA walkway at Steam Pump Ranch. It's necessary just because of what's out there. So, one, it's not accessible, but two, it just creates trip hazards, et cetera. So we're going to continue to focus on high quality park maintenance. And then also as it relates to the safety practices, ensuring for our restrooms, for example, we're in there 3 times a day now to clean, disinfect, et cetera. So we're working closely with that. Next slide, please. This provides an overall graphic in terms of our current fiscal year, which is in blue, and FY 2021. Overall, it is a 16% reduction. As you see, there is a little bit of an uptick in park management, but that's a lot of that is equipment replacement, but reductions everywhere else. Next slide, please. And then I leave you with pictures of the impact of our work. With that, I open it up to questions.
Thank you, Ms. Diaz-Trahan. I'd like to open it up to the council if you have questions for our Parks and Rec Director. Vice Mayor Barrett.
Thanks. Thanks, Christy. And we're excited about the fireworks. I wanted to ask, I have a few questions about the CIP. Is it a good time for me to ask those now, or should I wait until the end when we address the capital improvement plan? I guess that's as much for the mayor as the Parks and Rec Director.
I think let's do CIP during that segment of the evening, okay, of our meeting tonight. Yeah.
Okay. So then I just have, I think, one question. On your slide, you showed aquatics being down a fair amount, and I'm just wondering, what are the reasons for that? Are we going to be able to have fewer lifeguards because of the restrictions? Or I'm just wondering where that comes from.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. So in the current fiscal year budget and the budgets, I want to say about 4 years prior, we are our fee schedule related to two swim teams, the fast swim team, and it was the Push Ridge Pirates, but they're now the Oro Valley Swim Team. Mm-hmm. About five years ago, they switched from paying a price per lane, and we were doing a revenue share. And so what that meant is we collected all the revenues. So you'll see, you know, there's a lot of revenue, but then we also paid them out a percentage, and that, and so that's where that expense came from. And so last year in April, we started having conversations with those two swim teams, really talk, because their contract was going to expire in September. So last year in April, we started having conversations with the swim teams, essentially saying that our goal to treat all of our users equitably is to go back to the price per lane that they had been paying the exact same amount for about 5 years prior. So from, say, April through September, August, September, we had been working with those two teams on developing that new price per lane. So I know that's really a long story to tell okay. you why that number is reduced, but it's because of the model. It's just a model difference.
Okay. Is that comparable to the way other aquatic centers in the area and region charge for their aquatics facilities?
And price per lane? Yes.
Yes. Is that so? That's the same way that other centers charge?
Yeah. So most other places will charge a just a general user fee. So it's a price per lane, or you know, maybe a cost per person. We have about 16 different user groups that come in and use the facility. Certainly the two that I mentioned are our largest, but all of the other user groups are paying price per lane. So again, to make it equitable throughout, to ensure that we're treating everyone the same, we made that change.
Okay. That is my only question for now. I'll save the rest for the CIP. Thank you, Christy.
Councilmember Pena.
Yes, thank you. Christy, I just want to say that I think your apology earlier was very nice, and it shows a very good leadership quality, integrity. So thank you. I don't know if I should save this. We can talk about it possibly for CIP, but it's my understanding that there was a grant that the Parks and Recreation Department was awarded. Congratulations for.
Thank you. I forgot to add that because it wasn't in my notes when I developed.
That's okay, but it's good news for us.
It is.
In a couple of different ways. So the archery range, we received a grant towards the restroom facilities. Is that correct?
Yes, if I may, Council Member Pena.
You want to explain that?
So yeah, Mayor Council, late Friday after these slides were already developed and sent off, we got word from the Arizona Game and Fish Department that we were fully funded the request that we made for the for a restroom project at the archery range, which has been on our radar for quite some time, but we were shocked that we got fully funded. So it's a $50,000 grant from Arizona Game and Fish, and but the project is $150,000. So as we kind of transition into the CIP, I will make the ask in that I believe we have $300,000 in there set aside for the needs assessment implementation, and that I believe that we could use those funds to accomplish in this project. So thank you, Councilmember Pena, for
sure. And me. You know what? that's good. So I'll wait and ask the questions because I do have some relative to that grant, that with what you're asking for, the additional funding for the restroom. So I'll wait until then. Thank you. That's my only question.
Thank you. I don't see any additional raised hands from council. So I'd like to invite if there are any members of the public that would like to speak to this particular topic. And I'll wait a moment to see if there are any raised hands. Okay, seeing none, I'm gonna move on. I wanna check back in with JJ. JJ, on my screen, it shows that you're muted. I don't know if the technical problems have been resolved.
Mayor Winfield, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, great. Alex over in IT has enabled that. So I'm so sorry about the technical glitch. I hope at least you heard my presentation.
We did. Yeah, it was wonderful. And so we'll pivot to questions from council for the community economic development budget presentation. I know Vice Mayor Barrett.
Okay. Thanks, JJ, and thanks, Mr. Mayor. I just have one question. I want to make sure that with the budget cuts that you've generously offered up to help us through this crisis, that we still have the funding that you feel is necessary to help our local businesses to recover from the crisis.
Vice Mayor Barrett, thank you so much for that question. Yes, we have the funding. I actively worked with all of our managers and our ED team, and everything in the SEDS we can implement. We have the must-haves in place, so please count on us to step up and still perform at the high levels council expects. Like every family, we're doing more with less, so we get it, and we have the funding we need. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Because I think that's a priority for the town coming through this situation is to help our existing local businesses. So thank you.
Thank you.
Council Member Pena.
Mr. Johnson, I asked a question earlier for slide 61, page 61. And two of the items that stand out the most are administration and economic development. There was substantial cuts. So can you explain those, please?
Yes, Council Member Pena, thank you for the question. I actually don't have a page 61 in the documents that I'm reading from. I start on page 44 and go through 49.
This is your summary budget with the charts.
Oh, I see. Yes. Thank you very much. So basically, I'll just go line item by line item.
I only need to just do administration and economic development because those are the only two where they're very significant. And economic development to me has been a priority and needs to stay that way. So I just want to make sure of why there's such a significant change in those line items.
Well, we'll start with economic development. Certainly, a lot of the money that was in there was designated and approved by the council last year for the retail study. And okay. Town Manager Mary Jacobs and I thought we should get through at least a half a year to do the recalculation. We went through 7 great RFPs, selected one. We were negotiating with the finalist. The really good news is we had budgeted $70,000 and we were getting that finalist under $40,000. So once we get a few more business quarters under, we could re-engage the retail study. The other thing that I put in would have been a like to have had to expand our media contacts with corporate site selectors to do additional research, beef up our site selection part of the website. I'm certainly qualified to do that. And I will, instead of having the taxpayers pay for it, I'll just find a way to get that done. Also, part of the ED budget, Councilmember Pena, was $50,000 less for Visit Tucson that was parked in the ED budget. So that is part of the significant reduction you see. And then finally, the University of Arizona Center of Innovation at Aurora Valley, last year we had expended up to $60,000 and Town Manager Jacobs has cut that down to $30,000. And I know the U of A is glad to have that. Those are the major cuts in economic development and we can get along just fine without those in the short term until the town's budget picks back up. Thank you.
Okay, and then the administration portion, there is some of that linked or?
Yes, actually, I'm looking at page 45. Sorry, I don't see a page 61, so.
Okay, so let me just, this will probably help, JJ. So administration, you got it?
Yeah, I do. I have another sheet here. So a lot of what was in administration was the external retail study. We had put that in terms of outside professional contracts. So we cut that. We know we can get back into it when the economy clears up a bit. That was the biggest significant drop in administration. Of course, all of us across all town departments, we've curtailed travel and conferences and professional ed. We did that on all of our departments. So we can operate effectively with the budget proposal we're making to council tonight.
Good. I just want to make sure we're not impeding on moving forward with our economic development plans.
No, we are laser focused. We have been very aggressive in contacting all of our local businesses, particularly the larger commercial ones that have choices. And I think I said during the presentation, they have all said they're going to move forward with their projects. I talked to 3 CEOs this morning, all very major projects. Only one has been delayed by a half a year, but they're definitely going to do something in Oro Valley. And I'm just really excited about that. People see the value of our community. They know we have a lot of displaced workers that are driving out of our town every day to work somewhere else. They see the real estate assets we have. And by the way, one thing I forgot to mention in the presentation, this time that we're in, I mean, the cost of money is virtually zero. And people mm-hmm. with deep pockets, their projects just became much more bankable. So there will be pent-up demand. We're hearing it. They're just waiting on the wave to come. And I'm really excited about some of the projects we have in the queue that have not been announced yet. So fingers crossed we can get those closed.
Thank you. And I think that software is going to help with that once they do decide to invest in Oro Valley. So thank you. Appreciate it.
JJ, I really appreciate the outreach that you and Margie and I believe Amanda Jacobs have done to our local businesses during this pandemic. And I was interested in, obviously you've gleaned a lot of insights and information in those conversations, emails. We talked earlier in our budget discussion yesterday about $1 million being earmarked from the CARES Act to support our local businesses. Do you have some thoughts about how those funds could best be used to support our local businesses?
Definitely a lot of thoughts, and I want to work with Town Manager Jacobs and Dave, our CFO, and Chris Cornelison to really vet those thoughts out some more. I know that every business We have a lot of struggling ones in retail and restaurants and hospitalities and bars, people that are just barely hanging on. We know we're going to have some business closures. If we could get those businesses some liquidity, some forgivable loans, some grants, kind of like the PPE, the PPP was doing, when Town Manager Jacobs said the governor announced that Oro Valley is going to get $5 million, oh, thank God for that. So if we could get this liquidity to our local businesses, to give them 2 or 3 more months to recover, I think that would make the difference between so many, I can stay it, I see the light at the end of the tunnel, or I'm just not going to reopen at all. So it's critical we get the money to the small businesses that really need it right now.
Okay, thank you. Now, Council Member Rodman.
Yes, I'm sure, JJ, you would have added it, but obviously you talked about internal staff working on this, but obviously we're going to add Dave Perry and his staff to that. As you know, they have done an outstanding job over the last 2 or 3 months, working with your staff and by themselves, reaching out to so many businesses, including the big ones, including the ones that can help from a different angle. So I just wanted to put that in there, and I'm sure you meant to include them.
Council Member Rodman absolutely meant to include him. I wrote it down. Dave Perry, particularly, and his team, his staff, has just done a phenomenal job. And we have weekly coordination meetings, Amanda Jacobs and Margie and I, with Dave. We divide and conquer. We're sharing a database. When we learn something, it goes into our SharePoint. And his challenge to all of us on April 1st was get a contact database. And I think we're one of the first communities in this part of Arizona, maybe in all of Arizona, to have actually achieved that. The town clerk's office, the police department have been phenomenal getting us names. So now we know home-based businesses, rooftops, 1099 employees, we can reach businesses very quickly with new information just immediately. And we will be sending a survey out to all of our businesses, just checking in and asking about their current and projected status. And thank you very much for the comment. Oro Valley Chamber of Commerce has been a phenomenal partner, and we deeply appreciate their service.
Thank you. I don't see any additional council members raised hands, so I'll open this up to the public. If there's anyone that would like to speak at this particular moment, I'll pause momentarily to okay, Mr. Johnston, thank you. We appreciate your presentation. Glad those technical challenges got resolved so that we could get back to you with the questions and continuing conversation. So thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Winfield and Council, and all the best to everybody listening in. We've got bright days ahead of us. Just hang in there. Thank you.
We absolutely do. All right, we'll go to the Water Utility Department, Mr. Abraham.
Thank you.
We can hear you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Can everybody see me and hear me okay?
We can.
Well, thank you. Well, good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of council, my fellow colleagues. It's nice to be with you here in virtual form this evening. First, let me start off. I'd like to acknowledge the work by the Water Utilities staff this year and their collaboration and efforts in achieving several of the council's strategic goals, as well as making progress on those goals not yet completed. Additionally, I just like to recognize the efforts of the Water Utility and the town's budget team for their work. It's really a team effort, and we couldn't be here without everybody's with hard work. With that said, I'd like to begin with reporting on some of the major accomplishments of the Water Utility this last year. That we achieved one of the town council's strategic leadership plan focus areas, and that was to reduce groundwater pumping by maximizing CAP deliveries with existing infrastructure. This last year, we achieved the lowest groundwater production since 1996. We did this by maximizing our CAP deliveries and utilizing our existing infrastructure. And 49% of all water deliveries were water supplies other than groundwater. So that would be CAP water and reclaimed water. We took nearly 4,000 water quality samples, and all the results met the regulatory requirements. And we also made good progress and nearly completed another one of the strategic leadership plan's goals, and that was to expand education and outreach programs with respect to water conservation strategies. We expanded education and outreach programs. We participated in the Wilson Elementary School STEM Fair. We've worked really hard in outreach and made presentations to several HOAs and other community groups, getting our message out there about water resources, water conservation, and the tools available to our customers to help them with their conservation efforts. We've increased the utilization of the WaterSmart customer self-service portal. We have nearly 6,000 registered users, and we provided over 7,000 leak alerts directly to our customers. And the utility continues to successfully serve the community by providing a safe and sustainable water supply to nearly 20,500 connections. Next slide, please. The water utility is an enterprise fund. The water utility is self-supporting, and it's funded solely from utility revenues. The utility does not receive any funds from the town's general fund. All revenue is used for the operating costs of the utility. And the utility pays administrative services costs to the general fund for departmental support. For example, legal services, human resource services, procurement, finance, IT, et cetera. The mayor and council water policies require annual review of the water rates. Next slide, please. And since this recommended budget is funded by the revenues generated from water rates and other fees that will be presented to council in detail on June 3rd, it's important that I just include a brief presentation on the water rates. The 2020 preferred financial scenario proposes a base rate increase for potable water customers, and that would be $1 for a 5/8 inch meter. The preferred financial scenario also proposes a reduction in the reclaimed water commodity rate, as well as the reclaimed groundwater preservation fee. Staff recommendation, in light of the events that have happened over the past 2 to 3 months, staff recommends that no potable water base rate increase be implemented due to the hardships realized by the community due to the COVID-19 pandemic. But we are recommending moving ahead with the reduction in the reclaimed water commodity rate, as well as reclaimed water groundwater preservation fee. And as I stated previously, just wanted to touch base on this as we entered into the budget, but we'll dive deep into this on June 3rd when I present to the council for the water rate report. So we'll dive deep on June 3rd, but I just want to set a little bit of context as we entered into the budget portion of the presentation. Next slide, please. So this slide provides an overview of the water utilities operating fund summary. So we're going to look at revenues and expenses. So starting with water sales, you know, we're projecting a little over $13 million in water sales. And bear in mind, this includes no rate increase, and it also includes the reclaimed water rate decrease. So that has been projected in the water sales category. Service charges, a little over $3 million. Interest income is projected at $75,000. Northwest reliability proceeds. This is the money we receive for existing customers from CAP to provide CAP reliability. Our Northwest Recharge and Recovery Delivery System met the intent of that reliability money, and that money is spent on behalf of existing customers towards the NWRRDS. Bond proceeds are projected at almost $2.2 million. Total revenues are projected at a little over $19 million. Looking at the expenses, personnel, just under $3.5 million. Operations and maintenance, a little over $8 million. Capital, $3.2 million. $2.1 million of this $3.2 million is bond proceeds from our 2018 bonds, and the rest is cash funded. Debt service, about $4.75 million to be paid in debt service. And the transfer to our impact fee account of $2.2 million. And what that is we're paying for all of our NWRRDS project out of the impact fee, but we have to pay that fund back at the end of the year to keep that fund whole. So that's just what that represents, just an accounting thing. We also have a transfer to debt service of $2,500, and that goes towards the town's energy efficiency program, like the solar panels that are in the parking lot. The water utility has some debt service to help pay for that. In total, our expenses are $21,700,000. If you'll notice, the expenses exceed the revenues by approximately $2.5 million, and we're planning to cover that difference with the planned use of cash, and that would come out of our cash reserves. We project our cash reserves at the end of next fiscal year to be a balance of about $8.5 million, and that does meet our cash reserve requirement. Next slide, please. Oh, and what we're going to look at now is on the expense side, we're going to look closely at what makes up the personnel, O&M, capital, and debt service. So let's see. Looking at operating fund expenses, personnel. We're authorized to have 39.49 full-time equivalents. I've requested one additional full-time equivalent. And this would be an increase of $88,221. That $88,000 includes the one full-time equivalent and their benefits, as well as the retirement contributions and healthcare cost increases for the existing employees. We've budgeted for no merit increases. Next slide, please. Now, we're going to go through here is the operations and maintenance of the operating fund. And I'm just going to, for the most part, we're very much in aligned with the budget we were at last year. In those areas that are significantly different, I'll point those out and explain the reason why. So looking at our renewable water costs, this is our CAP water and reclaimed water. Our CAP wheeling costs, and this is what we pay Tucson Water to wheel a portion of our CAP water through their system to our service area. We've budgeted just under $1.8 million for that. CAP water delivery, this is payments to CAP to deliver the water to our storage, to where we store water, the different storage facilities in our active management area. We budgeted just under $1.7 million for that. Reclaimed water delivery, this is what we pay Tucson Water to deliver our reclaimed water to our service area, a little under $570,000, as well as CAP capital charges at $482,000. And what these are, CAP capital charges, is this is what we pay CAP to go towards the debt service to the Bureau of Reclamation for the construction of the CAP canal. This has been one item that has gone up significantly. Last year, the capital charge was about $370,000. This year, it's $482,000. And I'd like to point out that just these first four items totaled about $4.5 million and represents 56% of the total O&M, of the total of the O&M budget. And that aligns with our strategic leadership plan to fully utilize our current CAP delivery capability and reduce groundwater pumping. General fund services, as I mentioned before, that goes towards the town's general fund for finance, legal, IT, GIS, human resources, health clinic, those sorts of services that the water utility does use. We budgeted $902,000. Electric power costs $905,000, excuse me. Outside professional services, $612,000. This is up markedly, about 70% from last year. Last year, I was budgeted at just under $370,000. The reason I'm higher this year, I budgeted for, I wanted to have an aquifer study performed. The last study we had performed was in 2007. We have a lot more information now about how our aquifer responds to pumping, and I want to take a look at that. And so I budgeted money for that. Also budgeted money for some conservation studies work, as well as budgeted some money to perform a potable water cost of service study. In this current fiscal year, we had a consultant work with us to perform a reclaimed, to help us develop a reclaimed model, reclaim allocation model. So next fiscal year, we're going to budget some money to work on the potable side of things. Facilities repair and maintenance, $326,000. Fleet maintenance, fuel, $115,000. This includes 35 vehicles to maintain, and all other operating costs, $654,000. This is, you know, just everything else: water quality testing, postage, printing, regulatory requirements, chemicals, you know, just everything else. So total O&M, a little over $8 million. Just to give you some context, last year we were at $7.4 million. Here again, a majority of that difference is from the CAP capital charges increase, as well as my requested increases for outside professional services. Next slide, please. Looking at the capital, water main replacement projects. This is just replacing main valves, pressure regulating valves, just some miscellaneous main projects, $340,000. A well replacement and upgrades, $963,000. This is to complete the Nokomis Sky replacement well and some hydro tanks. And the reason I say replacement well is the town has, or the water utility has, several wells that were constructed with methods that are inferior to the methods we have now. They don't produce well, or they produce a lot of sand, or they require a lot of maintenance. And they're quite frankly just not very high capacity wells. We drilled Nokomis Sky as a replacement well. And I mean, Nokomis Sky's production and its through its modern construction techniques and materials replaces about three of our current production wells. So that's a good capital reinvestment project for us. A booster station upgrades, a little under $500,000. Here again, like you've probably seen in some of the executive reports, we're looking at, you know, power is one of our big expenses, and we're looking at the booster stations that they're not efficient. You know, we're spending a lot of money and not pumping a lot of water. This year we rehabilitated our El Conquistador booster station. Literally got twice as much capacity, utilizing not quite, but almost half the power. We're going after those kind of projects. They're gonna save us money, which is the same as paying us money in future years. Equipment, meters, and vehicles. This includes two new vehicles, $537,000. Next, reservoir replacement. This was an unplanned, unfunded project. During our reservoir inspection program, we realized that our 500,000 gallon allied signal reservoir was structurally failing. It was literally in danger of collapsing. So we took it out of service. We did some things to the system to operate without it. We're not operating in an optimized fashion. We do need to replace it, but that was unplanned work, and that's $750,000. We're going to need to do some work at our production facility, and I budgeted $150,000. So total capital, a little over $3.2 million. Just to give some context, last year, our total capital was $4.7 million, but that was largely due to the work that was involved with the La Cholla Roadway project. We had to relocate, you know, over a mile of pipeline, and that's why that capital was so high last year. Next slide, please. Looking at our debt service, our annual debt service is $4.7 million a year. This current year we're in, it was $5.7 million. We had final payment on a Series 2013 bonds last July, and that reduced our debt payment by about $1 million a year. So that's a big deal for us. And we have more debt payment coming up in the near future. Our total outstanding debt is a little over $31 million. Last year at this time, it was a little over $36 million. So our debt to asset ratio is about 30%. Last year it was 37%. I'll tell you what, a debt to asset ratio of 30% is great, incredible. Most public utilities, whether it's water, gas, power, I mean, they have debt to asset ratios greater than 50% easily. So it's nice to see that number going down. Also to give you context, just 10 years ago, our total outstanding debt was close to $60 million. Some additional perspective, 9 years from now, except for the 2018 bonds we bonded for in 2018, 9 years from now, all of our debt will be paid off, but we'll be needing to take on additional debt, but we're really taking a big chunk out of our debt obligation. The water utility, we balance the planned use of cash reserves with the issuance of new debt to minimize rate increases. You know, a lot of, you know, the capital projects we do, you know, they're expensive. Reservoirs and booster stations and these sorts of things, they're expensive, and it's not our current business model to cash fund all of that work. So we balance borrowing money with cash. And we do that, it's in an effort to minimize the needed rate increase to our customers. Next slide, please. Okay, our impact fee fund. So our proposed impact fee structure, we're proposing and we're combining our current two impact fees. Currently, we have an alternative water resource development impact fee and a potable water system development impact fee. It was appropriate to have two impact fees 20 years ago, but it isn't anymore. And, you know, in conversations with our legal team and finance team, they were in agreement. So we have one impact fee fund now, and we call that our Water Resources and System Development Impact Fee Fund. Our impact fees, revenues, interest, and the GPF transfer budgeted at $4.2 million. And the expenses, here again, impact fees, that's for growth, growth related. And we're pretty much spending most of our growth money on our Northwest Recharge and Recovery Delivery System. We budgeted $6.1 million next year in expenses. We estimate our ending fund balance of the impact fee fund of about $15 million. With that completes my presentation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right, thank you. Councilmember Pena.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Abraham, I have a few questions. If you want to go to slide 79, It's the operating fund budget, revenues and expenses.
Okay.
And first, I'd like to thank you and the water utility staff along with our commission, because I think that plays a lot into why we are having water rate reductions and why we can do this now. So thank you. I know all the work that you put into that. So the first question I have is, with expenses exceeding revenues, is that okay for the water utility?
So if we look at the budget deficit, first of all, bear in mind, you know, we make conservative revenue and expense projections. So bear in mind, I expect my revenues to be higher than what we've projected, and I expect my expenses to be less than what we've projected. So there's a conservative approach there. Additionally, we have the last 2 years, we've had a very aggressive capital program. And if you look at the capital portion of that $3.2 million, we're cash funding $1.1 million of that. Now, part of that is to cover the unplanned project of having to replace the Allied Signal Reservoir. But, you know, so that's cash funded money. But bear in mind, that's what cash reserves are for. It's for when these kind of unexpected things happen. Additionally, there's a little bit, the deficit is a little bit aggravated because we're not going to recommend the rate increase. And that's roughly a loss of $300,000 right there. And also another thing, bear in mind, we're looking at one snapshot, one moment in time. And to really get the full picture, that's where you look, when we look at our five-year pro forma. What you don't see in subsequent years is the reduction of debt service, us kind of catching up on capital, not having to spend so much on capital, those sorts of things. So to answer your question, because of all those things, in a one-year scenario, having a budget deficit like this does not worry me. Also, another thing is the water utility, every month, the water utility administrator and I sit down and we look at our revenues and expenses. And if we saw things weren't tracking right, we would make adjustments. For example, let's just say revenues weren't, you know, we had a real wet summer, fall, spring. And let's just say we saw revenues not even coming into what we projected and say expenses were coming in higher. Well, I've got that $1.1 million of cash funded capital that maybe we look at some of those projects and push them out of here. But we have lots of wiggle room here. But to answer your question, on a one-year basis, spending $2.5 million of our cash reserve, which will leave us with $8.5 million at the end, we've been here before. And so a great question. I'm glad you asked that. But I think we're good, and we have lots of fail-safes to protect us.
Okay. And so it sounds like with the debt service that's going to continue to decrease, the operating budget's going to be fluid.
Great point. You know, in just a couple of years, we're going to lose another $1 million a year in debt service that we're going to have to pay. And that's where I was saying you really need to, we're just looking at a snapshot in time, but you really need to look at those subsequent years to see the full picture. And that's why I'm not particularly worried when I see a one-year deficit like this, especially with the cash reserve balance that we will have.
Right. And the cash flow will improve. And then the other question I have is, so the $8.5 million, that includes the $2.5 million, correct? So what is the required cash reserve coverage?
Okay. So for next fiscal year, the required cash reserve is about a little over $3 million. I think it's $3.3 million. That's our required cash reserve. And to your other point, yes, that projected $8.5 million cash reserve balance, that includes spending $2.5 million of cash reserve to make up the projected $2.5 million deficit.
So we're sitting in a very good position with our cash reserves with the water utility.
And we are, and that's thanks to the support we've had from council and the management and our community.
Okay. And the other, I just want to make a comment on the debt to asset ratio being at 30% and looking at bond funding. One of the things that financing includes is looking at those ratios. And I would think that the bond debt cost was better because of our debt to asset ratio, because we've been aggressive in paying the debt down. Is that correct?
That's correct. We've been, I think we've been upgraded in our grading as far as how we're graded on a risk. But no, you're absolutely right. Having an asset that has the value that ours does, I mean, we have over 100, our water system is, the asset is valued at over $100 million. And, you know, when we go to take out debt in the future, if we're at, you know, 20, 25%, I mean, wow, yeah, we're seen as very low risk. And especially with our performance on paying debt for the past 24 years.
Yeah, no, that's a great position to be in. So congratulations to you and the team. Thank you. And no more questions.
Thank you.
Councilmember Rodman. Councilmember Rodman, you'll need to mute yourself. There you go.
I wasn't muted. Anyway, I want to just say you've amazed me for the 8 years that I've watched the water utility. So I'll tip my hat to Phil as well. But the commission and your staff, it is a complicated, lots of moving pieces, lots of partners, lots of collaboration, lots of statewide things. And somehow literally every year you come out with all the gold stars that could be given out for how we've managed in the desert an amazing water utility. I have to say that. I haven't been able to say it often, but it is always the first question in anybody's worrying about the town. We're in the desert, we're going to run out of money. Oh my God, we're going to build another house and that'll be it. We'll all die. And I mean, and you guys have set ourselves up in such an amazing situation. So thank you for that. So this seems silly, this question I'm going to ask you. That's why I started the way I did. I talked with a home builder yesterday who was saying, how come your water utility computer can't talk to the permitting computer to find out that there's a permit to have been a building permit or occupancy permit, I don't know which one, but one of the permits has been issued and he had to go find it himself and send it to the water utility. Is anything we're doing in the permitting department with these upgrades going to let you guys talk to each other, or was he just wrong?
You know, as far as electronic means, you know, I'd have to look into that. I'm sure in any process there's room for improvement, but I'll definitely.
Well, it's just a question, and I was just curious. We ought to be able to do that.
I hadn't heard that complaint before, but we'll definitely look into it.
All right. Well, that enough said. It just happened that you were there, and I had just been asked that. I'm sure there's a way through. Thanks, Peter, for all you're doing.
Thank you.
Councilmember Jones-Ivey.
Peter, I just want to thank you for just an outstanding report in this projected budget. I think you've done an awesome, awesome job with it. Question was answered, and of course it was about the cash reserve. But thanks again. I appreciate all your hard work.
Thank you.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Thanks. Sorry, I had to wait for the host to unmute me. So, okay. Thank you, Peter, for that good presentation. I have a couple of questions, one simpler than the other. And the first more simple one is about the Nokomis Sky Well. I saw that we had budgeted for the Nokomis Sky Well last year, and last year it was a rollover from the previous year. So it looks like that well has now been budgeted. Is this the third year Can you kind of explain that? I'm just curious how that well keeps coming in every budget.
Well, so with Nokomis Sky, what's been difficult with that is because of some of the issues with Nokomis Sky. Originally, you know, it was, for example, just getting electrical power there. We were going to just dovetail off of, you know, the electrical infrastructure that was going to be put in place for all the homes. We never imagined that it wouldn't be built. And so all of a sudden now we have to get electrical power there on our own because Nokomis Sky has no need to put electrical power there. They're not doing anything. We weren't going to do anything with it. So now we went through the process of getting easements to get electrical power to the site. And Nokomis Sky, that partnership was working with us, but for reasons probably beyond the scope of this conversation, they asked us to hold off on doing any work because they may start up again. So they asked us if we could kind of, if we would be able to hold off on doing anything because they might be coming back. I don't know how deep we want to go down that road.
Great. That's enough, I think. Should we then indicate in our CIP that it's a rollover like we did last year? Do we just leave it the way it is?
You know, I don't, and I, the dollars are still the dollars. We're still within the, we're spending bond money on that. We're still within the 3-year window. I think as long as everybody knows that, yeah, it's a project that we plan to have done, I think last fiscal year, because it's two parts. One was drilling and one was equipping. Okay. And, you know, it was drilling one fiscal year, equipping the next. So we're really behind one fiscal year. We were supposed to equip this fiscal year. And we didn't do that because of the reasons I had mentioned. But as far as what we call it,
It's okay. Yeah, that's fine. I was just comparing to last year's budget and looking at that. So it's fine. We all understand and know where that money is coming from. That still is moving forward from previous budgets.
It is a rollover.
Okay.
From last fiscal.
Okay. That's the clarification I needed. And my next question is a little more complicated. I'm sure you have an answer to be able to explain the situation. So I just wanted to kind of describe where my question comes from and then see what your response is. So in looking at last year, it's about the Northwest Recharge Delivery Facility. And in last year, we had $428,000 projected for this year's budget. And I know that things change a lot, but now this year we have about $5.5 million in the budget. So that's a pretty significant change. And then several more, obviously, in future years. So that's one concern that I have. And then the other concern that I have about it is I reviewed some of Marana's recommended budget, and my understanding was that they were one of our partners on this Northwest Recharge Recovery. Maybe you can help me with the acronym, but the Northwest Recharge Facility. And they are choosing to push out their capital investments because of the COVID in that facility. So they've got this year, they had recommended $3 million and they're pushing it down to $700,000. And then next year they had recommended $4.2 million. And we're pushing it down to 1.5 million. So they were kind of saying that because of the COVID situation, they were going to be pushing their investments in that facility out 2 or 3 years. So, you know, my concern is where we have invested 5.5 million for this year budgeted. And if, you know, are our partners going to be making similar investments and moving forward with the project? And so those are kind of, that's kind of my complicated question, and I'm sure that you have an answer, but I just wanted to explain kind of what gives rise to the question. So if you wouldn't mind responding to that.
So the Northwest Recharge Recovery Delivery System, those of us that are affectionate with it. We call it the nerds.
Okay, thank you.
So that might be easier. So you know, this is a partnership IGA between Marana Metro Water and the town of Rural Valley. And there's, I mean, there's a lot of moving pieces on this one. You know, we have the Pacific Railroad, we have to go under I-10, all sorts of, go across state land. So to answer the first part of the question, we were ready to go with a lot of projects or a lot of design work, but we didn't have a state land issue resolved. So it really held us up. Once we got the state land issue resolved, and we did, we were able to go full guns on design of a lot of things. So things are starting to happen fast. And the reason you see such a big budget number this year is we go into starting construction. So that's why the dollars are weighted the way they are. Now, I'm recently privy to some discussions that have to do with what you mentioned with respect to Marana's budget. Here again, Marana's fully engaged in this project. They're fully committed to this project, but because of some budget challenges they have, they're having to adjust when they spend their money. That may affect how we spend our money this fiscal year. This is all the things you're mentioning have come to light to me literally within the last 7 days. But here's the good thing is with respect to this partnership project, it isn't revenue funded. It's right now it's a majority growth related or impact fee funded. So we have that money there. If we don't spend it this fiscal year or the next, it doesn't really, you know, matter. It's not bond money. It's growth related dollars sitting there. So we can be really flexible in how much we spend and when we spend it. But yeah, I would expect, you know, and we're working with our Marana partners, both Metro and Oral Valley are working with our Marana partner seeing if we can have the schedule, you know, accommodate their needs. And we will when we are. But it might change how much we spend this fiscal year. But they're still fully committed. But I guess what I would say that is, and that's the one thing about partners is, if one partner's having a challenge or a struggle, the other partners, we're gonna do everything we can to work with them to keep them committed to the project. And we've gotten that assurance from them that they're committed and they need the project as well. Something that happens with our partners, it may change how much we spend and when we spend it. But let me tell you another thing. If there was a delay of a year or two, mm-hmm. It's actually only works to our benefit because we just collect more impact fees and then we can spend impact fee money instead of having, you know, say to borrow money. But there's a lot of moving parts. I'll tell you what, the challenges Marana's having, let's say it causes a delay of a year, there will be other delays that will offset this, you know, project of this scope, magnitude, and this many moving parts and pieces. But I am privy to the some of the financial challenges that Marana's having and some of the adjustments they're needing to make. The partners can accommodate that, and it will very likely reflect on the dollars we spend this fiscal year.
Okay, thanks. So if we go ahead and move forward with approving the budget, we can have the confidence that you'll still be a wise steward. I'm sure we can have that confidence, you know, in terms of making sure that the project's moving forward with our partners appropriately, et cetera. That's kind of what I'm hearing from you, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. We know that we can make count on you for that, but I just wanted to ask that question. You gave a good answer. I do want to ask about the impact fees. Is the money for this this facility, do we already have that money in impact fees, or are we relying on future growth to provide the impact fees for that? And do we need the facility as we are right now, or are we planning to need the facility if we continue to expand town boundaries and continue to grow?
So right now, as I had mentioned in the budget summary, we have $15 million in impact fees. This project has two components to it. It has a partnership component and an independent component. So the partnership component gets us to a partnered reservoir at Twin Peaks and Lambert Lane. From there, Marana heads to the north, Metro Water, Noro Valley head to the west, but then Metro takes a right turn and heads south at about Shannon. We take a left turn and head north at about Shannon, and we call those the independent portions. The partnered and the independent portion for Oro Valley, that's about a $25 million project, okay? 60% of that project is growth related. It's 60% of that project is needed to take this town to build out plus. 40% is for existing customers. Now, how did we come up with that? The way we came up with that is we looked at how much less groundwater do we need. The overreaching goal has always been no more groundwater declines. And we looked at how much more CAP water do we need to bring into our service area to stop groundwater level declines. And we made it an estimate of what that was, and that's the existing customers portion. So to stay true to that overreach, that I'm not going to say overreaching goal, it's an obtainable goal. We're getting closer to it every year. So to answer your question, do we need that now? Yes, right now we're wheeling as much water as Tucson Water System possibly can, nearly 2,600 acre feet a year. To get any more water than that, we have to do tens of millions of dollars worth of investment in Tucson Water's infrastructure to upsize things to get it here. And we looked at that. It didn't make sense for us. And that's why we entered into the partnership. So we need to get more water into our service area to further reduce groundwater pumping. The sooner we do it, the better. The town growth is not being supported with groundwater. It's being supported with a portion of our CAP allocation. We need to start delivering more CAP water into our service area to support that growth. So, yes, we do need it. Now here, again, this is a 4,000 acre foot facility. When we first go into operation, we might need only 2,500 acre feet. And as we get the more growth, we'll increase our capacity into our service area. And everything's designed to accommodate that. So I think I answered the question how much money we have in impact fees, 60% growth, 30% existing customers, stopping groundwater level declines, and supporting growth with additional CAP deliveries.
Yeah, you did. Thank you. So once we get this facility online, will that be reducing the payments that we're currently paying to wheel the water from Tucson that you have in your slides?
Yes.
Okay. So we also can expect some savings in the future to help offset the capital costs.
Yes, we project that it'll be less expensive to operate the NERDS system than wheeling through Tucson Water. But bear in mind, we would always maintain our IGA with Tucson Water for wheeling. And here's another thing is moving water throughout our system. We have four wheeling stations. The NWRRDS would just make it such that we didn't need one of our Tucson Water wheeling stations. We would still need the others because it's, you know, you can't get all the water just in one point and very easily spread it out. We get the water, you know, here and then 2 miles away here and another. We're trying to equidistantly deliver to our service area instead of just one big blast in one area and then trying to move it throughout the system. But to answer your question, there will be a reduction in the operating costs.
Okay, Sounds good. Thank you very much, Peter. I know that what you do is tremendously complicated, and we appreciate your understanding of it and helping us to understand it as well. Thank you.
Councilmember Solomon.
Thank you. Peter, thank you for that explanation. I think this is a classic case of the dangerous concept of trying to compare our budget to other municipality budgets. This metric was not a correct metric that was just brought up. It was implied that Oro Valley is way overspending on this item compared to Marana, and Marana was smarter because they were cutting the costs. In reality, Marana is having difficulty in their budget, and they're causing everyone else to have to adjust and delay this project. So the metric of comparing Oro Valley to Marana or somewhere else is greatly flawed unless you go down to this detail. And this detail reveals that a water utility is doing the right thing. And Peter, I want to apologize to you for the statement that was just made about, therefore I trust that you'll continue or still be a good steward if you spend this money. I'm sorry. You and your water utility staff and commission have been amazing stewards of our water system and the funds that you've been entrusted with, the funds that you generate, how you spend them, the enormous amounts of saving of money that you folks have done because of your conscientious efforts to always do more with less. And I believe most of the community appreciates that, and there's no doubt about your stewardship of money. And once again, this is the difficulty with trying to use metrics that are not metrics to make up something and say, look, Oro Valley must be doing something wrong because look at what Marana is doing. And it turns out, no, Marana is the one that is in trouble with their budget. Oro Valley is doing excellent. I wish we would stop this game and look at our budget and concentrate on that and whether we're doing the right thing. But once again, I'm sorry that comment was made. And I want you to know that for myself and I believe the rest of the council, we have faith in you and our staff. You folks are the top people around. Other municipalities try to recruit you away from us. You've all done a wonderful job over the past 8+ years on budgets, and we've run surpluses. We've built up the enormous amount of savings, and that's why we're in such great shape right now in the middle of this crisis compared to other municipalities and government entities. So thank you, Peter, and I just wanted to make sure I got that comment in there. And I see, I guess, the vice mayor is now asking to apologize. I see her hand up. So we'll let her go ahead and do that.
Mr. Abraham, I had a question for you in regards to the CAP capital charges. Are these charges for the original investment of the CAP, or are these for ongoing operation and maintenance of the canal itself? In other words, are these payments in perpetuity, or is there an end date to these charges?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, it's for the original construction. It does, and I don't remember when the debt is paid off. I think it's, I want to say it's 2030, but I'm not exactly sure, but it's not perpetual.
Okay. And are there's obviously ongoing operation and maintenance of the canal beyond the original investment. Is that something that's built into the CAP water charges?
Yes. Yes.
Thank you. All right. Vice Mayor Barrett.
Thank you. This is one of the challenges with a Zoom call, but if we were live, I would have made a point of order that Mr. Solomon is questioning my intentions in that case. I did ask that question not to imply that Oro Valley's budgeted amount was necessarily out of line, but to try and get clarification, because I know that this is a project that we're working in partners with, and I wanted to find out what the information was regarding the changing nature of our partners that are going on. And so that, I think that was clear. And my comments to Mr. Abraham about him being a good steward were that I know that he's a good steward. And I was trying to rephrase for the public what I interpreted as what he said, which is an assurance that when the budget moves forward, that he will make sure to use the funds wisely. And we know that he will. And that's what I said. And I was just trying to continue to provide that assurance that if and when we pass the budget with that in it, that we will have that, that we as the council, you know, feel confident about that. And so anyway, I'll just leave it at that. Thanks.
Councilmember Nicholson.
I just want to commend you for bringing the bond debt from 37% to 30%. Even just 37% is good. Bring it down, an extra 20% is fantastic. One of the questions, I had three questions. So the capital charge went from, I think it was like 300,000 to 400,000. Do you know what, I'm not worried about the extra 100,000 in costs in our budget, but I was just curious if you knew what happened in their budget that they increased 30%, or if there was some big capital project they did or some big purchase they made, or do you know what's going on with CAP?
So here again, when we do the budgets, we look at, CAP puts out some information on what they project, you know, their capital costs will be, their O&M costs. And they have fixed, and then they have like projected. Mm-hmm. And when we do the rate study, we're usually looking in the projected column. And at the time they did this, they were projecting that there would be curtailments to lower priority CAP users. So there would be less people to pay the debt on the system. So the people, higher priority users, their debt payment would go up because there's less users. But because of the excellent hydrology we've had in the upper basin states in the last 2 years, it looks like we might not realize that higher capital charge because there aren't going to be any curtailments to those lower priority users. And that's where I was kind of talking about, there's conservatism built in here all the way across, kind of dovetails into why the $2.5 million deficit didn't particularly spook me. But the reason why is they were projecting their, at the time we did the study, it's since been revised, but at the time we did the work, they had projected there would be curtailments to lower priority users and the capital charge would go up for the higher priority users because there'd be less users.
I'm just curious if they're building a new canal or something major. Okay. And then what's, just curious, what's the cost recovery of a booster pump? Is it like 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years?
No, it's about 20 years. You know, it depends, you know.
I should say for the more efficient ones, sorry.
Okay, depends on a lot of factors. But for example, on the efficiency we're realizing out of El Conquistador, I'd say 10 years. I mean, it's that much better. But typically, I wouldn't expect to see that much of a benefit. I'd say 20 years is very realistic. But in the case of a real big improvement, and I was working the numbers on it, I think it's going to be about 10 years for El Conquistador.
And then another curious thing I had, the water reserves, our H2O reserves, does that affect our credit rating at all? Does that help our credit rating, knowing that we have millions in Arizona specifically? I know that's not something in San Francisco.
Do you mean as far as the water we have stored?
Yeah, because they look at our bond rating as far as our debt service ratio, but I know some small towns, they don't have any water storage at all. Does it help our position as far as getting lower rates with having the amount of storage that we do have?
When you say storage, you mean like the number of reservoirs we have or how much water we've stored for the future?
Stored for the future.
No, that...
Okay.
You know, when I provide information to those rating companies, they want to know more about our debt to asset ratio, my years of experience, you know, our success for the past 24 years. I've never been asked how much water do you have stored.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to open it up to the public. If there's anyone in the would like to make a statement, comment. All right, seeing none, we'll take a 10-minute break, and so we'll resume at 8:10. Thank you. Okay, we'd like to resume our budget study session. The next presentation will be by Chris Corneliuson, our assistant town manager on town administration.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. I'm pleased to round out our department presentations this evening regarding our town administration functions. Next slide, please. And for the sake of time, I won't be going through every bullet point and I'll be doing more shortened version. I know we have council has a lot of questions on CIP and I'd like to have the opportunity to provide that for you all to ask. The major accomplishments for the administration side really represents just some of our major accomplishments that our administrative departments have achieved over the current fiscal year. Many are tied to our town strategic leadership plan. A few just to point out that specifically on the slide are our expansions of document access electronically, our improved bond rating to AAA, and achieving the highest census citizen response rate in all of Arizona, which is certainly something to be proud of. Next slide, please. So tonight I'll be highlighting the following budget for our administrative functions shown here. I'd like to point out that the budget and details for the innovation and technology department are still being finalized, but the operations and maintenance will be included as part of the tentative adoption budget, coming up in a couple weeks. And while I will be going over general highlights for these departments, we of course have every department director represented here on the slide that is available to answer any detailed questions you may have. Next slide, please. So given that these departments are primarily internal support functions, they relate to nearly all of the strategic leadership plan, either directly or indirectly, via budgeting and managing financial resources, human capital, technology, records management, legal support, and obviously town management support. However, this slide does list some more of the specific strategic leadership plan areas that we'd be covering. Next slide. So this slide shows a comparison of the current fiscal year adopted budgets to the recommended fiscal year 2021 budget for each department. To highlight a few of the variances in the far column, the increase for the town clerk's budget, which is approximately $62,000, is due to the upcoming election. That is a $65,000 cost. The information technology budget is also showing an approximate $138,000 increase. That essentially includes all of our software maintenance and licensing costs, printer and copy costs, telecommunications. It's all consolidated for all departments townwide, which has really streamlined our efficiencies and actually saved us money over the last 5 or 6 years. This increase is due to normal software maintenance and licensing cost increases for existing software. There also is a part of that increase was also represented by converting a part-time position to a full-time should funding become available, as the town manager has previously mentioned. The going down to the general administration budget, and this has been covered a couple of times already and last night as well, you'll see an increase of about $4.4 million due to that $5 million contingency that was presented last night, which is an increase from the $840,000 in the current fiscal year. Otherwise, most of the administrative departments are being recommended to experience some reduction in their budgets. Next slide. So the town manager's office, obviously the town manager serves as the chief administrative officer, handling a variety of responsibilities. You can see those in the first bullet point. Some of our major initiatives listed on the slide support our strategic leadership plan. and include improving transparency and communication specifically with residents, so increased education, performance dashboards, and also continuing to expand the town manager's peak performance initiative while streamlining our processes. Also, we are working and finalizing our comprehensive annexation policy. We expect that to come before you all in the next 2 to 3 months for your consideration. And finally, obviously implementing one of the big issues surrounding our community was council's decision on golf in the community center. And that, of course, includes working closely with our golf course operator. And that'll be a big initiative coming over the next fiscal year. So next slide. So this is probably the area where you all have most of your questions. I'm just kidding. The main duties of the town clerk are stated in the first bullet point. They serve a vital role. Their major initiative that I want to point out is exploring and implementing a new business licensing software system. And that would provide for a more streamlined and efficient user experience. Next slide. So our finance department, they manage a variety of technical functions, including accounting, processing payroll, accounts payable, annual financial audits, and also our debt and investment programs, and as well as procurement. What's new this year is they will also be working on drafting the comprehensive annual financial report, and that is a significant task our auditors have historically performed, thanks to our new CFO and the skill set that he is bringing. And finally, the last bullet point I just wanted to point out is we're beginning the process of researching various open books, financial transparency solutions to figure out which one works well with our financial software. Next slide. Our human resources team is responsible for a variety of tasks and duties regarding our employees and liabilities. HR's major initiatives focus really on effective and efficient government and also a high-performing organization and culture, while also ensuring our ability to recruit and retain talented employees. I know I heard that last night from many of those of you on town council. In order to really focus on our town culture, the HR team will be developing employee handbooks, updating our personnel policies and administrative directives, creating standards for performance and conduct for employees, ensuring that they are current and are clear, which is something that, believe it or not, employees really value, is being having clear direction. Next slide, please. Town benefits. Obviously, it was mentioned that we are self-funded, and we have been self-funded since fiscal year 2012-13 and provide both the PPO and high deductible health plan. There was a question last night about how many employees are enrolled in the high deductible health plan. And there are 73 employees out of 283 enrolled, which is about 26%. The cost of covering the premium, which was also a question last night, would amount to approximately $29,900 if it was for those 73 employees. If you assume a 10% increase due to that potential incentive, we would anticipate another $8,000 or $9,000 to be a total of $38,000 to $40,000 for that cost. With being self-funded, the town is generally responsible for all the medical claims. There was another question last night regarding our stop loss amount, and that is set at $150,000 for catastrophic events. And so by being self-funded, you know, we have a lot more control over our coverage and plans. We work very closely and are guided by our benefits broker, CBIZ, and we've been working with them for many years. And they have helped us conservatively estimate a lot of our programs and plans. They are expecting a 15% decrease, which has helped them negotiate no premium increases for our medical and dental plans. And that is good news, especially in the year that we are in with the COVID-19 pandemic. It is important to note that due to our employees' hyper participation in our wellness programs, We have been able to achieve a responsible reserve balance of approximately $1.1 million, and that allows us to offer no premium increases for our employees. Finally, the town has been operating our own health clinic since 2015. And that's available to employees and dependents on our plans. During last fiscal year, we have seen double-digit increases in usage for over 2,000 encounters. Therefore, we made the decision to continue and increase some of our clinic hours next fiscal year. We've calculated that we've realized a value on investment of approximately $3.39 for every dollar invested in the clinic. And that various things go into that, like less absenteeism from employees, less time away from work for care, where it's on site, they can just go, they don't have to drive a long distance, wait for long appointments, and also generic medicine being prescribed 95% of the time, and that is a large cost savings as well. Next slide, please. Our information technology department has an integral role in our organization community, and that has become very clear, especially over these last few months with the COVID-19 pandemic and allowing a lot of employees to not skip a beat and continue working and being effective. Their major initiatives are effective and efficient government with the transition of the department to an innovation and technology focus. Also, they're looking to evaluate the feasibility of a town fiber optic network and replacement of critical software programs. So, next slide, please. The general administration budget accounts for general overhead, non-department specific costs, community partnerships, and transfers outs. Just to highlight a few items on this slide, the budget includes Children's Museum, Visit Tucson, Chamber of Commerce. I know that was mentioned previously. It's housed in the general administration budget. The Southern Arizona Arts and Cultural Alliance, and then $30,000 for the UA Center for Innovation. There is also a $1 million amount that's been previously mentioned regarding the COVID-19 federal funding possibility. So, and then also the robust $5 million contingency is also budgeted, as previously mentioned. Last night, we discussed a little bit about the PSPRS $500,000 payment, and so I won't touch on that as that was discussed last night, and there'll be further conversation regarding that policy. Next slide, please. So the Legal Services Department handles our civil and prosecution matters. A major initiative that they are working both with the court as well as the police department is establishing a drug court, to provide opportunities for those convicted of certain crimes to address substance abuse. And as you turn to the next slide, that will be reflected also under the magistrate court as they are working together, obviously, with legal services and the police department to get that established. So with that, they promised I would be brief, and that wraps our presentation, and all of our department heads are available tonight to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Corneliuson. We appreciate your presentation. I'll open it to council for any comments and questions. Just as a reminder, I appreciate the fact that the great majority of questions and comments have been focused on the budget, and if we can continue to keep our questions and comments budget focused, I would appreciate it. Any questions for Mr. Corneliuson? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to open it to the public. Chris, Vice Mayor Barrett.
Thanks. Sorry, I didn't get my raised hand done in time. I wanted to ask about the draft annual CAFR being done in-house. Is that something that's typically done in jurisdictions or municipalities? I know in the past you mentioned we've had our auditor perform that for us.
Sure. Yeah, and I'd like to give Dave that opportunity to explain why having two separate entities create it and then one to check it is valuable. So I'll turn that over to Dave Gephardt.
Thank you.
Sure. Or maybe I should call for Jose. Is Jose on?
Looks like you're it, Chris. Right.
I don't know. Well, I think he's muted. There he's muted. Sorry, Dave. Maybe you want to walk over to my office. There we go.
Sorry about that for the pause and delay, Mayor and Council. Vice Mayor Barrett, excellent question. There are some new independence standards that have come out that have been promulgated by GASB. And these have been in the pipeline, been in the works for several years now, where they are deeming if the auditor actually prepares the financial statements or the CAFR that that there could be some independence issues for the auditing firm. And so in regards to whether other cities or towns or municipalities draft their own CAFR, if they generally speaking, if they have the expertise in-house, the answer is yes. There's certainly, because the financial statements, the CAFR document, they are the town's representations. They're not the auditor's representations. The auditor just opines on those financial statements as to the materiality or whether they're properly stated or not. So so the long story short on this is it is preferable in almost every case and circumstance if you have the expertise in-house to draft the financial statements to do so.
Okay, so then two follow-up questions. One, will we save money by having it drafted in-house? And two, to what degree does the auditor then go back over and sort of double check it?
Yeah, so Vice Mayor Barrett, another excellent question, actually excellent two questions. So I'll deal with the first one. Remind me the first question. I know the second. Let me deal with the second one first. So the auditor actually does review the draft financial statements because they have to opine on them. So so we will certainly draft those, send them a draft copy. They'll review them. They'll make sure that they are properly stated, fairly stated. From a quality standpoint, I actually think that it actually provides better quality because they're not doing those reviews in house. And then also the benefit to the town is that we have better understandability as to what those financial statements represent. So there's kind of a dual fold benefit to the town in handling it this way. Number one, we are hands-on with the drafting of financial statements. We know what's included in all the numbers, all the formulas, et cetera. But then also the quality of the document should be enhanced as well because there's a separation, a segregation of duties there.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, thank
good
you.
Answer, thanks.
Okay, thank you. We'll move on to the capital improvement program presentation, our last presentation for the evening. Just as a reminder, we'll exercise the law of 2 feet if you want to see those fireworks. I think they may be going off momentarily. But given the time, we'll press on with this presentation by Ms. Jacobs.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. This will be a brief overview. A lot of them have been touched on in the departmental presentations. So, but I just to quickly start on the next slide. We do prepare a 10-year plan for capital, but as you can imagine, trying to have a crystal ball for 10 years in the future is, it's very much a fluid document, and it is. And so really what that is a long-term planning effort. It connects with our infrastructure improvement plan, with the impact fees, and that will be updated when the council makes a decision about the impact fees. We'll incorporate that into our 10-year plan. But really years 2 through 10 are placeholders. And we look at that every single year and then determine based on needs that have come up as well as finances available, what it is that will be recommended in the budget. We obviously focus first on those projects that support the town council's strategic leadership plan. Next. So this is just, the reason why we like to show this is it's a really good visual to clearly see where the bulk of our investments are, and that's where the bulk of our assets are. The water system and roads, that's where we will always spend the most money, with maybe, save for a particular exception. Parks and Rec then fall behind in terms of the assets. So we are an asset heavy organization, and investing in and maintaining those assets is important. Next. So Mr. Kiesler reviewed a lot of these yesterday. I just want to hit on a couple. We're obviously planning for the completion of the La Cholla widening, which is terrific. Our continued investment in pavement preservation, doing an overlay of a portion of Lambert Lane. And we are planning for this summer to do a safety modification on La Cañada in front of the Lehman School. And then finally, we're excited that it's kind of our turn for a TABI grant, a Transportation Art by Youth. You may recall that's the grant process through the RTA that has funded previously those beautiful quail in front of Naranja Park and the beautiful art sculpture that was put in at the intersection of the community center, community center traffic signal and La Cañada. Next. I won't go over all of these because Peter covered them beautifully. We just kind of grouped them all together into major categories. Obviously the NERD system, as Peter, we're now affectionately referring to it. And then all of the different infrastructure again that he reviewed just a few minutes ago. Next. In Parks and Recreation, we did include $800,000 in the Community Center Fund. And again, we'll go over that fund with you on your June 10th meeting study session as just as a reminder. It's not, we're not covering it today because we're getting that final input from our new golf operator, Billy Casper Golf, on those numbers so we can give you a more solid budget. But we have budgeted, this is expected available fund balance to pay for the design of the full irrigation system for both courses in on the 36 holes, and then the start of construction in mid-May that would go through a couple of month and a half before we'd have to budget the rest of it in the following fiscal year. The steam pump ranch garage and Ms. Diaz-Trahan mentioned that earlier and described what the intent was of that process to restore the structure, to allow the structure then to be available and utilized so we could relocate staff there and open the facility 6 days a week and expand the access of to the public to the ranch, and which has once again in our most recent survey come out on top as our number one park asset that is visited by our residents. Another very exciting one, and again, Christy mentioned this, is a joint venture with Oro Valley Fast Pitch Softball. They're contributing $67,000, and the town will contribute the balance for a new batting cage and bullpen. This is going to be a really terrific addition over at Riverfront Park that will benefit the entire community and not just those who are in formal softball programs. So we're really excited about that. And then we have put in the budget a placeholder of $300,000 for a as yet to be determined priority from the just recently completed needs assessment once that moves forward. And as Ms. Diaz-Trahan mentioned, she is, and I'm proposing that we consider utilizing $100,000 of that to apply toward our $50,000 grant. Now, again, on June 10th, we will come back to you with potentially some other ideas and plans and recommendations for council consideration with regard to this this additional funding that the town will receive. And so there may be some other opportunities. Once we get more information, then that might open up additional things for council consideration for next fiscal year. Next. In public safety, and Chief Riley mentioned the Emergency Communication Center console replacement and the generator yesterday in her presentation. We do have some other public facility investments that need to be done on Town Hall. We've got some sidewalks that need to be repaired. They need to better meet ADA requirements. This is a very well-utilized facility. And one of the top issues that we get people wandering out here is they cannot find anything. And we need to make some improvements to that on this facility. And this has been on the list, on the CIP list for years. And I felt it was important enough that we just can't hold it off any longer. We need to make some improvements in our town-owned parking lots and multi-use paths, just some treatments in order to extend the life of those assets so that we don't end up paying more money in the future to maintain those. Next. And then in technology and vehicles, we are continuing, as was mentioned previously, with our vehicle replacement program. We have vehicles in our major departments. Most of them are in police. And as I mentioned yesterday, they're all at least 10 years old. I believe one is 12 years old and over 100,000 miles. This is part of our regular program. We have saved money over the years. We purposely put money in a fund for vehicle replacement so that we don't have to cut back and we can continue with that and ensure that it doesn't cost us more money in the future. And then in terms of technology, we already talked about the permit software replacement. We need to replace some backups. We are a technology-centered organization, and this is a must that needs to be done in order to protect our IT infrastructure. And then the $150,000 is for a new utility billing software package in the water utility. So theirs has come to the end of a useful life and it is time to replace it. And so we're including that in next year's budget as well. Next slide. And we do have some carryover projects. As you can see, excuse me, we have LaToya we've mentioned. We are going to do the Shannon Road design and just the design portion out of the highway fund this year. We weren't able to get to that, so that will be carried over. The generator, we tried twice to get a grant for it. It's just not happening, so we're going to go ahead and take that out of the capital fund. We were hoping to be able to get money for it, but that. And then Naranja Park Playground, we are anticipating a carryover of over $300,000. That's largely due to we've ordered the playground equipment and it's possible it'll come in by June 30th, but if it doesn't, it has to be paid out of next fiscal year. So I will tell you, we may have to increase that for some of the site work to carry over into July because we've had some delays in hearing back from contractors because of COVID. So I may be coming back to you with an additional carryover before we get to the final adopted budget. So that's what happens at the end of the fiscal year is we figure out what is done, what's not quite done, and then we move that money into the next fiscal year. And then the rest of them are water utility projects that need carryover. And again, Mr. Abraham just referred to those in his previous presentation. Next slide, please. And I think that is it. I'm sorry I didn't get y'all out in time to go see the fireworks, but my team and I are here happy to answer any questions, Mr. Mayor.
All right, Councilmember Rodman.
Yes, I want to go back to the garage for a minute, steam pump, and not really the garage itself, but as I understand it, you know, there were some, certainly some more than discussions about what we could do with the Historical Society to store the historical artifacts, etc. Clearly there is some connection to Steampunk Ranch with those artifacts or whatever you want to call them. Is there a discussion going on how we could do it differently now that we've, I understand why the garage is being retrofitted to do this, but I wondered if we are working with the Historical Society to find a different place, and if we do, is there money that's necessary? Is there a way to get some out of their garage? You know, we did have an agreement. Well, I shouldn't say we had an agreement, but we certainly had strong discussions about allowing that to happen, since they're all storing them, as I say, in their garages. So I'd like to know whether we're talking to them. Do we have any ideas how we could fulfill that soft agreement we had? And do we need any money to do that?
Certainly. Councilmember Rubin, I'll start, and then I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Diaz-Trahan. We had previously kind of paved the way for the Historical Society to begin using the office space of the Push House, with the understanding their request was we needed to sprinkle the building and secure the building in order to have artifacts in there, and we agree. And I think that there may be an opportunity, in fact, a really strong opportunity, where we could potentially take advantage of some economies of scale in doing the garage project and going ahead and extending those technology and sprinkler improvements into the Push House in order to begin that process. You know, that what we hope to see is as there continues to be additional interest, and we see some revenue opportunities as a result of people coming onto the property more, that will actually give us additional resources to be able to invest into the facility further. It's sort of a chicken and the egg kind of thing. We want to get people onto the ranch, which will generate that interest. And I know that Mayor Winfield and I and Ms. Diaz-Trahan, a couple of months ago, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, we had a meeting with the county officials, the deputy county manager, and some of their grants folks and their historic preservation folks. And they have also expressed an interest in potentially partnering with the town on looking for resources, and did not rule out the possibility of the county somehow contributing as well. So that's my initial part. I'd like to turn it over to Ms. Diaz-Trahan to delve into that just a little bit further.
Thank you, Mary. Councilmember Rodman, to add on to Mary's comments, we work closely with Pima County, specifically within their cultural resources and sustainability division, to look at some potential partnership and grant funding. But as it relates to the Oro Valley Historical Society, certainly as we continue discussion with them and opening up the Push House, we were looking at in doing the fire suppression and security system, but with some of the reductions we had to make due to COVID, I think that there is economy of scale specifically related to pulling the water across. And so that way we can address the fire suppression system and the security system. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. And actually what I can do between now and our June 10th next study session is to get a really good handle on what that new cost estimate is, Councilmember Rodman, so that way we can bring that to you for discussion as well.
Thank you. I'm glad to see there's going to be continuing discussion on that and see what we can do to make it work. Thank you.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. You know, when I look at our CIP and looking at the financial impacts that we might be facing, I would really like to see a prioritization of absolutely what we have to do versus what we'd like to do. And I also would like to know what has been completed in last year's budget. I hear what we're going to carry over, but I really want to get an understanding as to what's been completed, and are there projects that will just not get completed, and I would like to see a prioritization for next year. And Mary, I'm that is directed to you.
Thank you, Councilmember Jones Ivy. Our team took a different approach over the last couple of years in prioritizing, and rather, it is very challenging to assign points and actually put things in direct order because they're really sort of like low, medium, high. So we did do the prioritization that mm-hmm. way. All of the items that were that have been recommended to the town council are either in the high. We had three projects that were in the high category. And again, these were done by our CIP team. We have a CIP evaluation team that is cross-departmental. And then the rest of the projects, not counting water, I will say that Peter has his own CIP evaluation team for his water projects. And then all of the rest of the items were medium. And so, you know, I'm trying to look at the slides as well. What I think is clearly a common theme here with all of the priorities that you see in front of you, with the exception of the undesignated $300,000 for the Parks and Rec. Mm-hmm. Everything here is replacement or repair. There is nothing here that is new. It is fixing what we have. And so, you know, there are always ways that we can push things out and save them for another year. And the ramifications are that it costs more in the future. So if there is a target number as to what you might like to reduce, that might help us in putting a priority together. Because I think that's the golf course is out of a different fund. The riverfront batting cage has a match to it. And so you can see how putting them in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 kind of order. If I were to drop something off at this point, I would drop off the Parks and Rec needs assessment because that would be new things or repairs of things that are undesignated. I think with our additional funding from the CARES Act, I think that we'll have some opportunities here to potentially have the council have an opportunity to see if there are some additional things that you would like to look at including in the budget next year. And those decisions don't need to be made now, but this is gonna be basically a one-time influx of dollars. It's not gonna be something that we're gonna get every year. And so we wanna be mindful as to how we spend those resources in the future.
And it's my understanding that the CARES Act money there will come specifications on how that money can be spent. Is that right?
There will, yes. But what happens is, and what our understanding at this point is that the resources are going to be able to reimburse the town for expenditures that we've already budgeted and made. So when you
COVID, is that right? I'm sorry. But yes. It will be for COVID.
Correct. But if we've, for example, if we're able to, it's directed at public safety, if we're able to pay the salaries of a certain number of officers that we've mm-hmm. otherwise budgeted, and then it's being used for the police officers, but then we free up dollars that can be reallocated by council.
I understand.
So that's how it works. But I want to be careful to make sure that we know all of those rules before we do that.
Okay.
But they really are one-time dollars that will be available for council use.
Mary, I really would feel comfortable with some kind of prioritization, particularly given the unknown for our next budget that's coming and, of course, the pandemic that we're in. So if it's at all possible to give us an idea of what we can do, what can be carried over. I would really appreciate that.
We can carry any item in here over except for our number one priorities are the, and I'm sorry, I had that in front of me, our backups, our IT backups, the permit software, which is a must, and our treatments on the town-owned assets. Everything else, if that's the council's determination to carry anything over, we welcome your input.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilmember Pena.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Jacobs, I want to piggyback on the conversation you have with Councilmember Rodman and some of his comments with regards to the historical society. My question is, since the garage is scheduled to be improved, have any of those plans been completed, or is there anything in process at this point?
I'm going to ask Ms. Diaz-Trahan to answer that, because we have made progress on that, yes.
So I'd like to know exactly what that is.
Certainly.
Thank you, Council Member Pena. So we have a document that is 50% through construction document, which is sufficient in terms of cost estimating. We have a full cost estimate as well. We have submitted those documents to the Pima County group for review so that we can get ahead of the game in terms of approval. So what we do is we provide those to the county, then they approve that, and then they have to go to the SHPO, to the State Historic Preservation Officer, for approval to, and the spirit of that is to ensure the historic integrity is being met. So we're pretty far along in that process. We have been working with Corky Posters Group, who's done a significant amount of work at the ranch as well.
Okay, the reason that I'm asking that is the council, and you're aware of this, Christy, the council did receive some documentation from the Historical Society, mm-hmm. kind of outlining the history with their relationship with the town, you know, since the inception of this, with their historical designation. And I guess as I got to know more about this and looking at the fact that we're doing this garage, and the Historical Society has played such a, I would say, a large relationship with Steam Pub Ranch, I'm a little concerned that this has gone this far down the road before we've even approved this with the budget. And what I was going to, and the reason I asked that is because if Ms. Jacobs is going to go find out exactly how much it would cost to add maybe extra space or to do something that would allow for the Historical Society to have whatever it is they want to do with that space, what does that mean since we're already down the road? And I, what I am fearful of is that this group, we've had a disconnect to get everybody what they want in Steam Pump Ranch. And Ms. Jacobs, you mentioned earlier about economies of scale, and it would appear to me that we have this great opportunity to finally give some resolve, if this does get approved, to find some resolve with this group. And I understand, you know, the comment that, well, let's just see how much revenue we bring in or what happens with this. There's not going to be any revenue from this group. It is merely what I would view as something that we provide from the Historical Society as a benefit to the I don't know, the essence of Steam Pump Ranch. And it would seem to me that if we're already going to go down this road with the construction, when we talk about economies of scale, why would we not add that? And I don't want to get into a situation where a year down the road that this talked about because maybe the Historical Society was not able to once again be a part of it because, well, we get down the road and then this and that and whatever. And I understand we're waiting for a grant from Pima County, but what would be an issue where we go ahead and include it in this project, and then whatever we get from the grant, the town gets reimbursed for that. So we're not waiting and kind of dangling the Historical Society. So now that I know we've already gone this far down the road, that's kind of concerning to think that now we're just going to try to somehow configure them in. So how is that going to be addressed?
Councilmember Pena, when my comments in terms of working with the Historical Society and identifying space for them and for them to have the ability to borrow historic artifacts from the State Museum to be on display, my intent was for that to happen in the Push House, and that's where the economies of scale could occur. And so not necessarily cohabitating in the garage, but really identifying the Push House as that would be the area where the Historical Society could really do more than what they're already doing, because we would be able to have those security measures put in place. So that's where the direction I was going. And I think that, point well taken in terms of working with the next approving agency, certainly point well taken in that. I think that as we come back on June 10th, I believe is our next study session, we can circle back and meet with, you know, their president, Roxy, and her team. So that way we can come together with a better resolution to help you all as final decision makers make decisions that you think are in the best interest of not only the ranch, but as our entire community.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. My pleasure.
And then, Christy, as we talked about earlier, the grant for the archery range and the bathroom. So I agree with you on that. And while it's a bathroom and it doesn't seem that important because we are associating it to an archery range, I think it's greater than that, because are there not walking trails near there, or where it would really benefit a lot of community members to be able to have that there, that utilize that area, not just the archery range? Is that correct?
That is correct, Councilmember Pena. Even though we have two walking ranges on the east side and the west side, they are also intended to be commingled with anyone that wants to walk out there or jog or whatever is part of the trail system. So that general parking space is also a quasi trailhead, for lack of better terms. Mm-hmm. And then additionally, I know that, we haven't in the last year or two, but when we first opened the range, we had had a few tournaments out there, and some of them that we weren't able to get was because of some of that infrastructure. And so the more that we can build that, having water fountains, shade structures, which, you know, we're checking them off the box progressively, then the next phase would be the restroom facilities.
Yeah. And to the point earlier, you know, I think what we've looked at in our strategic plan is we want to be able to bring in outside revenue. And I do know that the archery range, it is a revenue producing place for the town, because people do come in for tournaments and whatnot to participate there. So I would say that that's something beneficial, because we are getting a grant. It's no different maybe to the batting cages, where we're getting some type of funding. So let's take advantage of it now, right? Especially with construction costs being what they are, and, you know, we don't want them to increase. So I would say that I think it's a great idea, Christy, and I support doing the restroom, not just because it might help the archery side, but I think for just people that need to have a restroom, and it's kids or whoever's walking and utilizing it. So there's many community members that would probably utilize that facility. So I think it's great, and I would support that.
Thank you. And we, as I mentioned earlier, in terms of seeing more people in our park system, there have been more people out at the archery range also, because that's a really a family-oriented sport that creates, you know, naturally socially distancing. And then, you know, through this process, PSC Archery has shut down their outdoor range and their indoor range. And so we're seeing and, you know, hearing from people that are coming to our facility now, so that way they still have an opportunity to recreate in that manner as well. So providing that diversity is pretty darn awesome within our system.
Right. And as Naranja Park, if we end up having really big type of events, it doesn't hurt to have a extra restroom in that area for sure. Right. So thank you.
You're welcome.
That's the end of my questions.
Thank you. Vice Mayor Barrett.
Thank you. Thanks. I just want to echo what Councilmember Pena and Councilmember Robin discussed regarding the garage and the concerns that they mentioned with the Oro Valley Historical Society. And I would like to see that situation ironed out and us to work with our partners in that regard. Also, in regards to the garage, I would like to request that in future that the council be made a little more aware of these kind of projects as they're being thought of and rolling forward. Because if we're looking at a over $500,000, you know, investment in Steam Pump Ranch, and I found out about it when I got the budget, and then when it was mentioned at a Parks and Rec the night before our budget meeting. And that's the first time I had heard about that. And so then when I had citizens approaching me about it, you know, I didn't have the answers because I hadn't heard about that project going forward. So, you know, I think it would be helpful if we're working on creating designs and things for projects that are going to be a significant amount of funds like that, that we could kind of keep the council abreast of that in future. And I am happy to see Steam Pump Ranch get some much needed funding for their historical preservation. I would like to see this project go before the Historic Preservation Commission and then have the Historical Society have some opportunity for input, because I do want to make sure that if we're going to invest that much money into Steam Pump Ranch, that it's in the most needed area. So if it's designed to, you know, really facilitate the historical nature of the property or facilitate events, keep it open, that's really important. And I appreciate that. I want to make sure that it's not just we need office space, and so we're putting it into Steam Pump Ranch. And that's where, as I said, I don't really know enough about the project to be able to have those things. So I'd like to make the request that maybe before June 10th, the Historic Preservation Commission have an opportunity to look at that and maybe see if we can come to some kind of a recommendation to council.
Vice Mayor Barrett, the HPC actually is not meeting again until September. I can tell you though that they have historically supported any project related to preservation and restoration. They have spoke highly about in years past maybe the lack of funding for the preservation functions of the building specific. We've certainly invested in the preservation of the landscape. And so I think that if we, again, they're not meeting again until September. So if we need to have a special meeting or something before June 10th, then I guess I would defer to our town manager for guidance in that direction.
Okay. I mean, I would appreciate that because I just like to have some more information about the project, especially with people who are very familiar with the master plans of Steam Pump Ranch and the prioritization. I feel like that's why we have the Historic Preservation Commission, is to help guide us in terms of major investments. And if we move forward with this, this is the most significant investment that we will have made in the ranch in any number of years. And so I want to make sure that it's being made in the right places in the ranch that are the most important, and that it's not just about office space. That's kind of where I'm going with that, is, you know, I want to kind of hear from that. So I would appreciate that, but we can follow up in future, and it doesn't have to be right now decided. I'd also like to find out some more information about the Oro Valley Marketplace multi-use path. There's $400,000 designated for that. Can you describe that project, and is this at all related to pending projects at the marketplace, or is this completely separate?
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, this is a stretch of the multi-use path along the Oro Valley, the marketplace, that the town accepted prior to, or at the time that Town West Realty invested their $50 million in the property. It is in really sad shape, and we've gotten lots of complaints about it. And we have two choices. We can patch it and probably spend, and Mr. Kiesler can say, you know, maybe $100,000 on it. And then we'll still have to reconstruct it in the future because it's in such sad shape. I'm not a fan of throwing good money after bad if we can help it, but there's some safety issues, and it's been taped off in some places. And it is, in my view, I think it's a safety hazard that needs to be taken care of. Now, we can do it on the cheap, and certainly it might buy us a couple of years, and we can fund the difference later. But, you know, I always like to recommend the better solution, the more permanent solution. And I don't know if Mr. Kiesler wants to jump in with some additional details.
Sure. I think that's good.
Okay. All right. Great. Thanks.
If that's okay with you. I know it's late. I think yep. That answers my question. So it doesn't have anything to do with any pending projects. None of that would change.
No, that is correct.
Okay. Yep. I just want to make sure that... you know, that anything wouldn't affect those dollars one way or the other.
No, nope, okay. Absolutely not.
Let me see. I think I got most of the rest of those answered. And regarding the $300,000 for the needs assessment, I think that the council should go ahead and hopefully allocate that in the budget. And so, anyway, my sense from the needs assessment was that far and away the top needs were trails and open space and things like that. And I remember the consultant said, people want to go to a park and walk. And so I'd like to see a decent chunk of that money go towards Naranja Park trails, whether that's improving the existing paths that we have, or ideally adding a paved trail that would allow people to take laps or walk while they have sports going on and things like that. So that's kind of, to me, the low hanging fruit of a park that has that available and really meets the needs assessment. Because at Riverfront Park, you know, that path that goes around Riverfront Park just gets used constantly. Yes. And it's used by every age group, from little kids on bikes all the way. And so it really meets the needs of a lot of our residents. And so for me, I think that that would be a good use of those funds that would really meet the needs assessment. And that's kind of my pitch as to that's what I'd like to see done with those needs assessment dollars, or maybe started on it and then continued in a future fiscal year, or, you know, however that kind of plays out. So.
All right. Great. Yeah. Well, we will obviously let the council make that determination. And for now, it was a placeholder while Christy and her team kind of went into that next step of the needs assessment and prioritizing. And then partly, what can we do for that amount of money, right? That's meaningful. Right. So, but this is good feedback as we bring some ideas forward to you for council direction.
Okay. So would it be too much to ask, or is it feasible to have some kind of a rough cost estimate for what it would take to put paths around Naranja Park before our before we finally approve the budget?
I'll talk to maybe not more work than we
can do in that time period.
I will talk to Mr. Kiesler and see what we can do before the 17th.
Okay. All right. Thank you. As I said before, we went into these budget study sessions, I always have a lot of questions, and I appreciate the readiness for answering those questions that's been provided. So
thank you, Vice Mayor.
Council Member Nicholson.
Couple things. One, it's a little bittersweet for the Oro Valley Historic Society. Obviously, they've wanted work and money spent on there for a long time. Getting the $500,000 is great. I'm sure they're super happy, but I did read the letter, and they did say something about, you know, losing trust or breaking trust or something like that. And I know that that's, you know, Tracy's very thoughtful, caring, and she's got a great heart. And I know that, you know, there's nothing in her realm that would be purposefully done in that way, but I don't know in the future if we can try and bring them. And I know most other council members did say something about it. I don't know at this point what type of involvement or how that would look, trying to bring them into an involvement with that. But I mean I've talked to Pat Sproul, Paul Loomis, Roxy, Dick Everdeen. I know the old council members and the ones we have on now, probably I'll talk to them too, but they do have a really large amount of passion, and they spent a lot of time, volunteer hours. I mean, anytime I've been over a steam pump ranch, I always see one or two of them hanging out around there. So I know they spend a whole lot of time over there. So I don't know what kind of involvement we can bring them there, but I do know that they really are kind of the life behind steam pump ranch. The other thing for the CARES Act, one idea I thought about was, I don't know if we can just have designation as like a COVID officer or COVID task force or some type of way in order to, you know, make some early designation so possibly down the road that we could get that money a little easier. Let's see. I can't read my own handwriting. Yeah, I'll just let that be it. I know Steve's fighting it.
Councilmember.
And if I may, Mr. Mayor, just briefly before you sign off. So Councilmember
Nicholson.
Councilmember Nicholson, you have our commitment. We'll be circling out to the Historical Society. And as you heard Ms. Diaz-Trahan say, we'll have at least some preliminary information June 10th, and we can always continue the conversations after that. And regarding the CARES Act, thank you for that idea, and we'll be looking at all of the details. So thank you.
Councilmember Solomon.
Thank you. First on the garage, which if I recall correctly, is also the Carlos house and barbecue pit. This project is not a surprise. This has been discussed for a good number of years. It's been mentioned at council several times. It's been discussed a lot at the historical, Preservation Commission. They've been extremely concerned about that and the other structures not being preserved and not being improved. The Historical Society has been working on this for years. I know I've seen the plans while they were being developed. There was a lot of thought that went into it. So this has been an ongoing project. And yes, there seemed to have been a last minute change where it had always been assumed that, whether it was right or not, that the Historical Society would be using that as their base. I understand the pros and cons of the town using it, but I think part of the issue was after several years, this was just, they got a phone call an hour or two before it was released. So there's where the disconnect is. Town did not start talking to Historical Society, who've been invested in this for years and had a lot of the input on the plans, apparently until some type of decision was made. But anyway, I wanted to clear up the fact that this is not something new. This has been in the works. It's been circulated around. Council has seen it. Historic Preservation Society has seen it. Then moving on, then park and recs assessment. What we have so far is raw data. There's no analysis in that yet. That's the next phase, and that's what Parks and Rec is doing. That's what's important. Before we start spending time and effort on how much does it cost for a walking path around Hot Town Park, how about we let Parks and Rec do the analysis so they can tell us, based on the analysis, we think this these are the top three priorities. We did this once already this past year in our Hot Town site, where a big project was implemented prior to the study, prior to the needs assessment, prior to the analysis. Let's not do that again. Let's let them do the job. Let's let Parks and Rec come to council and recommend, instead of council telling Parks and Rec, well, I would like this or I would like that. That's why we did this statistically valid survey. So let's get the analysis and then figure out where the money, if any, should be going.
Councilmember Jones-Ivey.
Apologize, I'll put my hand down. I did not have any further questions.
All right, thank you. Councilmember Rodman.
I was going to say pretty much a lot of what Councilmember Solomon said. I think we are jumping the gun to ask staff to begin to try to figure out how much it might cost to do something as a result of the beginning of this process that's supposed to lead to a master plan. I listened twice to the consultant at the PRAB meeting and then at the council meeting, and he was very clear that this is information, but it is not something that jumps in that says, okay, this is the most important use of your dollars. This is what we should do. That comes as they go into the analysis that we've talked about. So I'm not saying that a trail around Naranja wouldn't follow there, but I sure as heck don't think we should be putting time and effort and money behind our staff to go figure out what that might be. I think we've got to let the process go. He was very clear about what that process is. And as I understand it, the Parks and Rec folks understand that that's where they are too. This placeholder, I believe, was to be there so that if in fact we get to the master plan in next fiscal year and something jumps out that we can do with $300,000, that we would have a placeholder to do that. And to me, that makes the most sense. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I don't see any other raised hands from the council. So if there's any statements by the public, this is your opportunity. Seeing none, I'd like to express my appreciation to Ms. Jacobs and your team. I know pulling together this budget and this particular upcoming fiscal year has been a challenge given the pandemic and COVID-19. But we appreciate in the presentation, the 108 pages, certainly is a significant effort on your team's part, and we appreciate it. I also want to thank my fellow council members for your review of the manager's proposed budget, the PowerPoint that was provided. Your questions have been helpful, and I think it will have provided some direction to Ms. Jacobs and her team. We appreciate the public that's joined us in these deliberations. The next opportunity for budget discussion will be the Budget and Finance Commission on June 2nd. So with that, we'll adjourn this evening's meeting. Thank you.